the commission right now. So, so with that, are you ready to start, Kara? Okay.
Thanks. Before I begin, I just want to go over what you have in front of you, a memo I sent to you dated February 11th, just summarizing the project, and some items to consider for discussion today. And then today we received two letters, one from Conway, dated February 21st, from Craig Boritz, and one dated February 21st, signed Gustavo Cruz on behalf of the NWDA. And also, before I begin, I'll go through this in my presentation, but this site is under the guise of the newly adopted Conway Master Plan. So there's two binders for you guys to share if you want to reference the Master Plan. Looks like this in front of you. And then I pulled out one section for you to reference. It's the Design Standards and Design Guidelines, Section 5. It's the 8.5 by 11 stapled packet. But I'll go through the sort of the meat of the Master Plan in a moment. So with that, we're here for Design Advice Request EA 12-156491, referred to as Block 296 of the Conway site. So proposal summary, the site is a two-block site with three main components. The first is an existing warehouse, adaptive reuse of that warehouse into a grocery store and two small retail spaces. Second component is a C-shaped apartment building with 110 units, ground level retail at Northwest 21st and Tuck Under Parking. This is 21st. And the third component is a required 60-foot wide pedestrian accessway with grocery uses spilling out into the accessway, landscaping, pedestrian through zone, and surface parking. We have here the zoning EXD, which is central appointment with design overlay. The site is depicted here. Also hatched are areas also owned by Conway. Conway is selling this off to C.E. John for development. The site is also within the Northwest Plan District, and more specifically within the Northwest Master Plan area, which I'll go into in a moment. But the master plan that guides development for this area now was approved in September 2012. As part of this request, there's two modifications to the master plan standards. One's required setback at Northwest 21st, and two is a standard that states which elements are allowed to encroach into accessways. To take a few steps back for those commissioners who didn't participate in the master plan, I'll be brief, but just to give you some background, the map you see here is from the Portland Zoning Code. The boundary is the Northwest Plan District. What's shown in gray is the area that's required to get a master plan adopted prior to development. The code also acknowledged that if there were adjoining properties owned by the same entity, they could be added to the master plan. So about a year ago, we started with the city's review process for Conway. They chose to add those red highlighted properties into the master plan area. So the gray and the red are under the guise of this master plan. There are several hearings with the Design Commission last year, with advice going to the hearings officer, ultimately approved the master plan in September 2012. The master plan is kind of a mini zoning code for these properties. It established use standards, development standards, design standards, design guidelines, land use review thresholds and process, traffic mitigation, a phasing plan, and future amendment review process, all for these gray and red properties. Here's a very basic site plan of the area. The master plan area is outlined in the red dash. Open spaces are depicted in the colors, so there's anticipated to be a public park and plaza with development. The aqua areas are the accessways. This is the site we're looking at today, the first development for Conway. It's anticipated that this office building and this office building will remain, and building four courts at the terminus of the accessways. And here's just a very basic massing model. No projects are beholden to this. It's just primarily to show maximum build-out. The site we're looking at today is here. Obviously, this isn't the development because the warehouse building is remaining, but it depicts the accessways shown in green stemming from the park one block south and east of the site today. Aerial of the site. This is the existing condition of the site. It's an existing warehouse building with surface parking. The remainder of the Conway area has a few office buildings, warehouses, and primarily large surface parking areas. We've got 405 freeway at the north edge of the Conway site. Streets, we've got Raleigh to the north, Quimby to the south, 21st, which is one of two main north-south commercial corridors in Northwest, and then 22nd to the west. This depicts the pedestrian district boundary. It's anticipated that will move to the east once development occurs on the Conway area, but this site is within the pedestrian district. This depicts Transit Access Street. Sorry, all the titles are on the ceiling, so I'll read that to you. Here is City Bikeway, Northwest Raleigh, to the north of the site. Just walk around the site quickly. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the site, but here's the warehouse that's being converted to the grocery store. This is looking east on Raleigh, so this is the north edge of the site, one of the existing office buildings across Raleigh. Looking west on Quimby, the site is on our right. Across 21st, so we're standing at the site looking southeast. This is the future park. It's across 21st and then a block south. And then these are views of 22nd. This is north across the street, that existing office building. Across the street to the west, typical warehouse in Northwest Portland. And then south along 22nd, some more recent development housing. You see the hospital beyond. And then again, the warehouse building for the grocery store. This is along 22nd with the head-in parking. This is the warehouse elevation facing the future accessway. And then here's 21st, the surface parking in front of that warehouse building. And here's the warehouse with the surface parking across the street. I'm not going to talk a lot about the project to allow Holst to go through it, but to get to the topics of conversation, I will blow through it a little bit. Again, we have the warehouse, the accessway, and the apartment building. This is anticipating streetcar. Streetcar lines have not been laid, but it potentially could be at 21st and Raleigh. So there is a nod to that corner. Also proposed to remain is the head-in parking along 22nd, and we have PBOT staff here today. They have authority over this design exception that I'll talk about later in my presentation. Proposed site plan, again, the accessway, 60-foot wide accessway is depicted in gray. We've got the grocery store, and then two independent retail spaces have been carved out to activate all four streets of the warehouse. The apartment building, the extent of the building is depicted by this line, and the remainder is surface parking. And to talk about parking a little bit, here's a site plan. There's 67 at-grade parking spaces. These are covered by the apartment building tuck under, and then these are surface parking, all for the grocery. And then there's a ramp down at this point here, going down to this one level of residential parking. I think it's about 80 spaces. I might be wrong. But the extent of this underground parking aligns with the edge of the ramp. So below this line and over is underground parking. So to go through each of the three components of the project, this is the warehouse grocery building. It's obviously getting a new life with a lot of new windows, new materials, canopies, entries being activated at all four sides. This is facing the accessway. This is facing 22nd with those two independent retail spaces. Here's the north elevation at Raleigh and the south elevation at Quimby with some loading areas here. And some rendering showing the grocery at the access points for the accessway. This is from Raleigh and this is from Quimby. These are the elevations of the warehouse facing 22nd. So just to stop here to talk a little bit about another process that needs to happen. The head-in parking to allow the head-in parking, the applicant would need a design exception through Portland Transportation, which I don't think has been formally submitted, but there's concerns from transportation about the safety and such a large exception request. So it's something we should talk about today. It's not under the Design Commission's authority, but you could provide advice to PBOT, and then also if it does ultimately get allowed, it's under the authority of Design Commission for design aspects. Moving over to the apartment building, C-shaped apartment building with tuck under parking and then surface parking with a ramp down to the underground parking. There is a modification request to this building, and it's along 21st. You see here the property lines depicted. A new standard in the master plan says that the building must extend to the property line for 75% of the property line. So that would be 150 lineal feet. The cutout for this plaza here to acknowledge the potential future streetcar and the generous lobby are what are requiring the modification, which I feel seems more than reasonable given these generous spaces for an active street. But that is one of the two modification requests. Here's some elevations. This is the elevation of the apartment building facing 21st. The north elevation at Raleigh, the retail turns the corner. Tuck under parking is screened with a wood screen. And you see the ramp structure beyond with the surface parking. This is the elevation facing the accessway with the tuck under parking. It's definitely a four-sided building. And south elevation facing Quimby, the retail again, turning the corner. We've got loading and then, again, the screen for the tuck under parking. And this is the entry to the ramp for the parking underground. An image of the cutout at that intersection of 21st and Raleigh. And images of the building facing the accessway. And then finally, the third component of the project is the accessway, the first for the master plan area. The face of the building to this line here depicts the 60-foot wide required accessway. It includes it's very programmed space, includes a variety of uses. The grocery will spill out and activate the space. There's a cafe area extending 16 feet into the accessway. The through zone here, there's cart areas with bike parking along this wall behind the structure, which is meant to be sort of a community gathering covered area. We've got landscaping at the corners and surface parking. Along this whole frontage, which is a big concern of staff. This image is from the master plan, which shows a typical condition. Obviously, we don't have two buildings fronting the full 60-foot wide accessway, but this shows the allowance for standard 8E, which is modification number 2. What it says is that for the 60-foot wide accessway, which is from this point to this point, building elements can encroach up to 10 feet on either side. So we've got it, and it allows elements such as stoops, stairs, decks, et cetera, private outdoor space. The modification stems from the fact that the grocery store has a 16-foot wide deck extending into the accessway. But what this also depicts is that the accessways will remain on center, the center line of the accessway, 40-foot clear. This writing here, which is hard to read, it's a ped bike accessway designed to be determined, public access easement required of the 40-foot clear. Obviously, landscaping and pedestrian amenities are allowed within that space. So to look at that graphically in plan, we've got 60-foot wide and then the 10-foot zone for allowed encroachments. And what's left is the 40-foot area, and this accessway obviously includes a variety of uses that weren't acknowledged in the standards, and particularly the surface parking is a big visual element.
Can you pull the mic a little closer to you?
Oh, sure. Sorry. The parking being a big component of that 40-foot wide space. Here's some images of the accessway with the grocery spilling out, the screening of the parking. This is that deck that extends 16 feet in, which I know Hulse will get into. There's grade issues that need to be dealt with, so that's helping with getting up to the existing finished floor of the warehouse. And then images again. This is looking north with the parking, the covered area, the carts and the bikes, and the cafe space of the grocery. So to end, discussion topics. First off, this is obviously setting the stage for the Northwest Master Plan area, the first project out of the chute. Second, the pedestrian accessway, there's a lot of programming of that space, including the modification request we need to acknowledge and the surface parking within that 60-foot wide area. I think it would be good to touch on for PBOT, and as they move forward with their design exception, for you to provide input on the head-in parking at Northwest 22nd. And then ending with sort of our typical areas of focus, the ground level of buildings, including the modification request for Northwest 21st setback, which, again, I feel seems warranted with the design that's proposed, building materials and quality, and then the building designs. These are buildings that front streets and an accessway, so they're definitely four-sided buildings. And with that, I'll end there, unless you have any questions.
Yeah. Any questions?
Kara, what's the there's a reference in the master plan to required public easement, public access easement required. Is there a, is that for the full 40-foot width? Is that the intent?
Yeah, that's administered by PBOT, but the graphic does suggest it's for the full width of the accessway to allow people to be there. I don't know what the language would be for that accessway, but it's a typical public access easement for, like, down at South Waterfront,
Okay. Those
types of streets.
And the graphic, it's too little to see up there, but it's flexible design to be determined.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right? Is that
yes.
The statement?
But I saw a width of there of 60 feet.
So, right.
It's face of building.
The
face
accessway,
of building, right.
Right.
But
the accessway is intended.
If you set your building farther back, is it still 60 feet?
Well, 60 foot has to, it will receive the public access easement.
Right.
The building could be further back. It's not required to be at the 60-foot line.
Okay.
And then within that, there's the flexibility to allow minor encroachments. And the standard does suggest elements such as stoops, stairs, and decks. It doesn't cover every type of element, but that's depicted
does
here.
Does it specifically rule out uses?
It does not.
Does not. Okay. Is there language that describes that?
So there's.
I know there is.
This image here, which kind of leaves it open to what the flexibility of what could happen within the 40-foot clear zone. There's a design guideline that's specifically for accessways and the expectations and principles for those. And that's, real quick, I'll find it.
Sure.
Oops. So on page 76, guideline 7D, it's a full page, so I'm not going to read the whole thing unless you'd like me to. It talks about expectations for accessways. So this is an approval criteria for the design review, and it describes, you know, what's expected for these spaces and the types of uses allowed. And then we have one design standard, 8E, which is on page 41, that actually talks about what's allowed to encroach in the accessway. So those are the three areas of the master plan that talks about accessways. It's the one guideline, the design standard 8E, and then this image that's up on the screen.
So if I understand right, the south building, the mixed-use building, that one doesn't have any projection.
Correct, right. So from a technical standpoint, the modification is for this deck. There's no other...
And the no parking, right?
The master plan doesn't say no parking.
The graphic does. Do you see that? This guy right here?
Yes, this right, figure 06/8 street section, pedestrian accessways, parking, none.
Mm. I mean, if that's not in the other part, then that's fine.
That's true. Yeah, good point.
But that's a graphic. I mean,
right.
It's got to be written in the...
Yeah, it's not in the development standards or the design guidelines.
Okay.
But true, it does say...
All right.
Okay, so technically, what does that mean to us?
It's does this plan meet the approval criteria, which is the design guideline?
Right.
Okay. Not the design guideline graphic.
So is that it's part of the document that's been adopted, right?
Right. Yeah. It wasn't...
So is it like drawings and specs in our architecture world?
Right.
which takes precedence. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you see here, too, it says ped bike easement. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one really wanted to see parking within these accessways. I mean, we touched on it a little bit this summer at the DAR when this was kind of unveiled quickly and there were concerns raised. There is not... The word parking is, or the sentence parking is prohibited in the standard, but it's called a pedestrian easement for peds and bikes.
Okay.
The use, that's the intent.
Thanks.
Any other questions, Kara? All right. Gentlemen?
Chara, C.E. John Company, 1701 Southeast Columbia River Drive, Vancouver, Washington. Jeff Stewart, Holst Architecture, 110 Southeast 8th Avenue. I'm going to start with a little overview of C.E. John's goals and objectives when we got involved with this project almost 2 years ago. Talk a little bit about an art program that we've been implementing on this parcel as well as other projects that we have in the neighborhood. And give a little history for the commissioners that haven't been involved, as we have been involved in this project for a long time. Just to follow up briefly before that on some of the questions that the commissioners raised, Jill Long here with Lane Powell on behalf of Conway is available to answer and address some of those questions about the language as it was drafted, as she drafted it along with GBD, and I think it speaks directly to some of the questions that you pointed out, and I think she's willing to come up and speak to those on behalf of Conway. So with that, I will get started here.
So design goals, urban design goals that we kind of laid out before we started the process. Critical, I guess, number one, start building a sustainably designed, mixed-use, 20-minute neighborhood. All the projects that we're working on in the area are LEED Gold. This one will be as well. Central to this concept was anchoring the district with a neighborhood-oriented specialty grocery store, something that we proposed to Conway very early on before the master plan process really got legs and started to be implemented. You know, we've had actually control of this site before the master plan started, almost a year and 7 months now, and it's kind of been along for the ride as it wound its way through completion. So I'm going to kind of go through some of that history a little bit. We want to reinforce Raleigh Street as the primary retail bridge between 21st and 23rd. And there's a number of reasons why, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Transition to scale and density from the edges inward. I think it's something not spoken directly about in the master plan, but something that's been occurring as Conway sold off kind of perimeter parcels. But as you move towards the denser fabric, the transition between those elements, trying to avoid an abrupt line in the sand between what's surrounded by fairly low density one- and two-story buildings and higher density projects that we'll see today. We want to retain and enhance existing neighborhood fabric where it was meaningful, the warehouse being case in point. Doesn't look like much from the outside today, but has really good bones, has a lot of value, has a lot of character that we can give a new life to. For new buildings, this was probably the most challenging one, was defining an architectural typology that's rooted in place, that's not contrived, and is contextual in that it connects with Northwest Portland, but not contextual in the sense that it responds to all the parking lots around the neighborhood. There's not a lot of context directly there. So how we got to where we did, I think, is an important story that Jeff will speak to. Activating the pedestrian accessway with energy and vitality. From day one, as we proposed the grocery use, we envisioned this accessway to be a commercial, high-energy, high-use area. It's not a quiet residential street, which that diagram that you point to indicated as if there were new properties on both sides with residential uses and stoops and so forth. The guidelines do speak directly towards a variety of uses and the character of those accessways taking on the character of those adjacent uses, something that we all parse words with carefully when we wrote the document. A goal for the new space is creating unique and personalized retail storefronts that activate the street. This is a goal of C.E. John. We have a retail background, but basically trying to avoid what we see a lot of in Portland, which is large monolithic treatments at the bases with two flexible spaces that lack any kind of personality. So really strive to create a vocabulary where personalized retail storefronts that reflect what I think people like about the older parts of the neighborhood that evolved over time, smaller shop-oriented type situations that create a lot of interest and personality for the retailer, and embracing the larger goals of the master plan. So Kara talked about some of this, but I'll just kind of recap here. 21st and 23rd, Kara didn't mention the jug handle, which you, for those of you who were on this commission while the master plan was being done, was a big topic, but this is essentially the traffic pattern that dumps traffic off of the freeway there around on the 20th Avenue coming on to the end, and then the first major intersection you hit is really Raleigh. So it kind of sets up Raleigh as a central spine through the neighborhood. And we've seen that as the important connection, bringing the energy from 21st, which kind of stops basically right down here where Wildwood is, kind of you end up in some dead blocks right here, and energy on 23rd, which does continue pretty much all the way to Thurman at this point. So this connection being an important link between the two if you were going to follow the retail path through the neighborhood. So why Raleigh? Again, just kind of looking at an image here. There's the warehouse by the Red Arrow. Pretty much already extends all the way to 22nd right now. Block 296 kind of being the remaining piece between that 22nd Avenue and 21st Avenue location. We are doing a couple projects in the neighborhood. I wanted to point out some of which you've seen, the Benevento up here on 23rd and Raleigh, which is under construction, project that you approved in August of, or late 2011, that we'll be completing here shortly. On the other end of Raleigh, Sawyer's Row, which is another project by Holst that you approved August of 2012, that just started construction. So we're kind of anchoring the activity that's on both ends of Raleigh Street. Sets up Raleigh and 23rd as an important intersection. As you may recall, there's a traffic signal that is conditioned on the grocery store and development of Block 296, so that becomes somewhat of an arterial by nature. And then you see Raleigh and 21st being an important intersection, again, to kind of create that retail spine at the ground level. Something else that we're doing at CE John is an art program that we're integrating throughout all of our projects. I just want to point out a few pieces here just so you're keeping that in mind as the district evolves. At Benevento, we have a site-commissioned piece of artwork by Hap Tyvee that recalls the Vaughn Street Ballpark, which is the namesake for our project, the Benevento, named after Rocky Benevento, who was the groundskeeper for the old Vaughn Street Yards, kind of neighborhood hero. Just down the street is the Murdoch Gallery, which so it's already there, kind of an established gallery presence on Raleigh. At the other end, at Sawyer's Row, we included these various lantern elements that are along the ground floor that we'll be working with the local artist on that will create some interest and intrigue along the streetscape. And then, you know, as we move into the 296 project, there's some opportunities that we're exploring. One that you may have seen on your images, and there's some different variations of this. We've looked at the east facade of the building as potentially a place to do something interesting with a graphic or a mural of some kind. These are just placeholders right now. Don't really know what that's going to be just yet, but it's an idea. It's a location that we'll be working with New Seasons and engaging an artist to come up with something kind of fun and festive. Maybe it's a mural. Maybe it's a graphic. Maybe it's an assortment of colors, but an area that we would like to explore. Also, along the Raleigh, Kara mentioned the little screening element where we've got some parking. There's another opportunity to do something interesting, another kind of placeholder piece here, but another opportunity to do something kind of interesting. And then at the corner, we made a big gesture at that intersection, something that we like to see replicated on the surrounding blocks. We have an opportunity to do an artwork piece on the corner there that could anchor that with the street, with or without the streetcar. If the streetcar doesn't happen, it's still an important piece. And we hope that over time, you know, as the rest of the projects get developed, there's opportunities for that kind of theme to continue on to create a little bit of an informal art walk along Raleigh Street. So a little history here. Today, this is the site, 52,000 feet of surface parking, 142 surface stalls, kind of big warehouse. That's what it looked like when we first approached Conway a year and a half ago. We had kind of an idea of, wow, that's a great adaptive reuse opportunity for a grocery store. Pretty simple, kind of convert the building. Got parking that's already there. We have an opportunity to maybe do a future development on 21st. Again, it's before pedestrian accessways, before a lot of the discussions really took root. The building right now is raised, just so you know, as a dock height, because it's a warehouse, so it's about 4 feet above grade. So a lot of what you saw here was an effort to raise the grade, like a Wieden and Kennedy-type loading dock situation, where we'd raise everything up, and then, you know, people could park and walk up ramps and so forth. That proved to be problematic with the grocery use as we got into it further, but that's kind of what you saw here. As the master plan started to take root, and this was happening as we put the land into contract, we knew we had an adjustment needed for the size of the grocery store, which is something that was implemented as part of the master plan. And as we started hearing and working with the NWDA planning group, a lot of discussions about building mass on 21st. This was a second iteration. Some of these were snippets that I think were you may have seen pieces and parts of through the master planning process, but we introduced a few pavilion buildings, something like maybe you see down in the Pearl District by the Elizabeth, that could be cool freestanding buildings with plaza areas, restaurants to kind of buffer the zone here. Parking lot got smaller. We were still showing, at this point, a 12-foot sidewalk in front of the grocery use. That evolved further as the planning and discussions continued to more mass on 21st till we had a skinny mixed-use building with underground parking kind of shown here, another skinnier parking lot, and expanding plaza area from 15 to 35 feet to activate certain areas, and some retail activation along the bank side when we were trying to figure out what to do with this 20-foot wedge piece of land here that the property, the building's only 180 feet, so you got this 20-foot zone here where the parking is today, the head-in parking. That evolved further, and I think you may have seen this one where we explored bookending the site with more housing on 22nd. That one really proved problematic as we got into the guts of the grocery store, integrating that with their mechanical and trying to connect this building to the parking underground, and we were cutting the warehouse in half, and it was just becoming kind of a gymnastic exercise to make this thing work, and we kind of pulled back a little bit from that. Again, similar, having an active use up here, but always envisioned to be kind of a shared use, active zone, but having the grocery spill out into the plaza area. So here we are today. Project's come a long way. We've got a full 40 feet now in front of the zone with a 20-foot flex zone, as we call it. It's an expandable zone for festival use. It could expand out here to tents, and we're going to be talking about how this the zone could be used. But an important part of the overall parking count, making the grocery work. The deck encroachment, I just want to point out, is less of an encroachment. It's the first time I've actually heard Kara talk to it as an encroachment, because we've always seen that it's part of the gray break of the plaza and how we step that down. It's not really an encroachment. It's pretty much part of the 40-foot access way. It's just we have to pick up. We have the grade matched here on Quimby, and we lose about 4.5 feet of fall across there. So we kind of have to make that work somewhere, and this was the best way to keep that, we thought, working. And on the west side, again, activating the corners with plaza and trying to retain existing parking that's there. Strategically, a goal of ours, separate the parking uses. The underground parking supports the residences. The surface parking supports the grocery store. Street parking and the existing parking on 22nd supports the ancillary retail visitors to the property. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff, and he's going to get into the details.
A lot's been covered here, and do you want to pull up Kurt? And Kara did a pretty good job of showing most every image we got here, so so I think we can go through this pretty rapidly and get into some conversation. Again, I want to introduce Kurt Lango, Lango Hansen, who is our landscape architect on this. Kurt, do you want to give your 2 cents?
I'll repeat my name again. Kurt Lango, Lango Hansen, Landscape Architects, 1100 Northwest Gleason.
Alan Jones, Holst Architecture, 110 Southeast 8th Avenue.
So just a kind of a further quick introduction, and I'm not going to spend too much time here because really a lot of this has been covered. Just in kind of the 3D view, you kind of get a sense of those boundaries of Conway there. Currently with the amount of open space, you're going to see get a glimpse of this site from the upper decks of the freeway coming down in. But you can see where this is kind of the idea of kind of incrementally pushing in towards the center of the block there. One thing I do want to point out here in the district, and what really will become, I think, part of the personality of this district, is those pedestrian access ways. And unfortunately, we keep kind of, and I think we're even guilty of it on our team as well, is that those pedestrian access ways keep being called plazas as well. But they really are more kind of passageways, pedestrian-oriented passageways in that area. You can see there's kind of two sets of those, one to the west, which is a three-block, other to the east in blue that you can see kind of traverses from the park area up to the existing Conway building. I think the intent, and Jill is here, and I think it would be a good idea at a point to bring her up and really kind of parse some of those discussions around uses in that area, but the intent all along, and there's been a long history of conversations both with the city through the Conway Master Plan, that these are going to have their independent kind of personalities. They'll develop over time, and it's going to be tied to the uses that are intended for those sites, whether it's more residential in some cases or maybe more business-oriented. In this case, what I think is a real strong acknowledgement is that this will be a mixed-use neighborhood and not solely a residential neighborhood necessarily, not solely a business. I mean, the idea is to really have this vitality and let things kind of take on their own personalities. In our case in particular, and since this grocery store was really kind of the thought of it was in play long before the master plan kind of was birthed and adopted, was this notion of bringing kind of a catalyst project into the neighborhood for a use that is sorely needed at this end, and trying to fit this in a way that allows a grocery store to survive. I mean, granted, we still drive to grocery stores at this point. We still load our cars with groceries at this point. As this district densifies over time, there may be opportunities to maybe kind of build over areas where we have parking at this point down the road, and then we've kind of taken that into account, or we're taking that into account as we kind of plan this, so that in the future there is perhaps a possibility to kind of do some infill in that situation. But right now, that connection of parking to the grocery store and really activating that area and the traversing of that, we think is going to be ultimately a good thing, at least for the short term, next 10 years or so. again, you've seen some of these issues, but we do really have a wonderful old warehouse, and we've heard from the Neighborhood Association that we've met with a number of times and showed the progress on the work. It's a simple building from the outside, but it really does have nice bones and some really beautiful trusses on the inside with clear stories. Neighborhood has expressed kind of a desire. What we've understood is maintaining and keeping some of that character in this area, that we're not just tearing everything down and starting new. I get a quick exon of this area, and I'm going to probably turn over to Alan here, and he can talk about some of the specifics. We're further along on the grocery store. We've got some timelines that we really need to stay up on here with the store and then the housing piece as well.
I'm going to talk about this in three sections. I'll talk about the warehouse first, and then we'll talk about the pedestrian accessway, and then move on to the mixed-use building last. The wrong way. So this is a sectional diagram that shows all the components of the project, with the warehouse on the left with the small retail component facing 22nd, then the grocery store, which is New Seasons, the pedestrian accessway, and then the parking for the grocery store on the east side of the pedestrian accessway, slipping underneath the residential building, and then retail on the ground floor. And then Kara was right, we are providing 80 parking spaces, residential parking spaces below grade. Site plan, similar to the one that Kara showed, we've just added a few colors here to, highlight the retail on 22nd. There's likely a larger space in the northwest corner that's about 5,000 feet, a 3,000 square foot site. A smaller 3,000 square foot site in the southwest corner, and then the grocery store is approximately 28,000 square feet. Oops. The grocery store opens up both to Raleigh and to Quimby main entrances on the corner. The pedestrian accessway is shown in green, and the parking, as mentioned, slips underneath the mixed use building. Design strategies for the warehouse, reuse in an existing component of the neighborhood. We want to retain the industrial character of the warehouse, open up the building corners, activate all of the frontages of the warehouse, provide expansive canopies, and integrate the building openings with pedestrian outdoor areas, then strategically place wall treatments. So we're looking at we're looking at paint schemes, as Kara mentioned and Tom mentioned, kind of the murals and key zones on the warehouse to kind of enliven the facade. And then we're using wood, wood canopies, the wood loading docks to kind of give it warmth and give it character. As mentioned previously, the red triangles show the primary entrances. So the grocery store has primary entrances both to Raleigh and to Quimby, but also we're adding these vestibule pieces that open up to the pedestrian access side. And then as the retail side on 22nd develops, there'll be retail entrances kind of sprinkled around, but we're still working kind of on where those would be. Kind of an axon of the east side showing the pedestrian access way in the foreground and the warehouse in the back. And kind of the strategy is really to open up the building corners with large sections of storefront covered by kind of expansive canopies that are, we looked at industrial canopies, similar to the canopies on 13th, kind of wide in Kennedy. These canopies are approximately 12 feet wide. We're using wood underneath the canopies to kind of strategically kind of warm up the areas in these key zones. Stormwater planters are shown kind of adjacent to the parking. As Tom mentioned, the on-grade entrance is at the corner of Quimby, and there's approximately 4 feet of drop across the site. So since the grocery store all does need to be on one level, you do get a kind of a raised kind of dock loading area, which we've developed in kind of a cafe kind of program outside of movable door panels on the side. The view from Raleigh, showing the large sections, the large canopies over top of the raised kind of loading zone. We're using storefront windows and looking at different mullion patterns at this point, but, trying to reflect kind of industrial style kind of openings with storefront on the corner from Quimby. The 22nd side showing, again, strategically using paint treatments to kind of show key zones on the building. Still exploring kind of exactly where the storefronts are going to be shown, but in this case, you know, the section of orange and the section of charcoal with new canopies and loading zones, because we have this grade change on this side as well. The elevations of each side, and we're showing the calculations of the ground store window area lengths and areas. We do meet the requirements on all sides of the building except for Quimby. We're looking at Quimby as kind of the back of house, but the loading zone side. There's bottle return area on Quimby. The requirements on the access way, we actually have 66%. And 35% of the area, which is slightly larger than, you know, other areas in the city, which are only 25% area. So we're really, really kind of bumping up the amount of storefront to really kind of open this building up on all four sides. The south elevation, you know, showing the loading doors for the grocery store, and then the north elevation showing, you know, we're trying to provide as much storefront area as we can. This slide shows a good example. We've looked at EcoTrust as a good precedent. We've kind of studied the width of, there's this 20-foot wide zone outside of EcoTrust that we studied in terms of the way that the building opens up onto a pedestrian zone that has tables and chairs on it. And we've kind of comparing that to this 40-foot zone that we have outside of the warehouse. So we have twice as much space for...
I think also... having had the experience working on EcoTrust, the other thing there, it was always the idea was that that parking area was a land bank area that somebody's going to get a building. In this case, we try to set up kind of these rooms in that area, and if you've been at any kind of summer festivals in that area, there's been markets and stuff like that. There is this opportunity to transform that parking lot area into more of a festival-type space. I think the intent here is that we would like to really work towards a solution like that where, of course, with the grocery store, they could be a key component. There could be food festivals. There could be weekend kind of music type things that throughout the year on that situation. So that's really kind of what's inspiring us in this situation.
And Kurt will speak to the pedestrian access way and the way that we're programming it, but the comparison that we wanted to make here is the width of that space and comparing it to the 20-foot zone on EcoTrust, which we think is really successful, to the 40-foot zone that we have, you know, adjacent to the grocery store.
So I recall there's a grade difference between that, though?
On EcoTrust, yeah, there is a grade difference there because, again, it's a warehouse space,
sure.
So we had to have...
So it's a couple feet
so
up.
Bring it up. Yeah.
And then,
we have the ramps at the end on that one.
Right. And then the landscaping between the terrace and the parking is pretty broad, too, right? I mean,
there's about a 5-foot planter there, so it's really kind of net usable in that area. It's about 15 feet in that sense, but it's wide enough to... And there's quite a few picnic tables and outdoor tables in that area. And this is something that I think that we should discuss with commission is just the intimacy of those kind of spaces. And when do these things become too vast and impersonal, and where can you kind of create these kind of intimacies?
Yeah, as Jeff mentioned, there, you know, these are kind of bioswales and storm platters between this zone and the parking lot, and it's similar to what we're showing. We are handling stormwater kind of between the access way and the parking lot. I'm going to pass this over to Kurt and let Kurt discuss the access way.
Great, thanks. And I'll just kind of briefly go through this. I think even though we are looking at the area between Quimby and Raleigh, I think we began by looking at the entire accessway, the three blocks. And although it's really important to think about this as a linear pedestrian and bicycle kind of thoroughfare, we also began to think about it in an east-west direction and how through a series of courtyards, expanded streetscapes, other kind of pocket parks, it could really begin to create this whole another level of placemaking. And I think that's what we started to do in this first area, is not only think about it in terms of that north-south direction, but also think about it how it could not only begin to think about it in terms of an indoor and outdoor space with the market, but also how it could move further east into the existing or into the proposed parking area. We did want to refer to the goals that I think Kara has already mentioned in terms of the public access, the 40-foot width, which we're maintaining, also the 16-foot width, which it calls out in the guidelines for bicycle and pedestrian access. It also looked at materials, stormwater treatment, and really expressing the character of the adjacent uses. But for us, too, I think different than a lot of the other kind of Portland access ways you see around town is we really thought of this as really kind of a vibrant urban outdoor space, really flexible, could be used all throughout the year. And here it could really express the unique character of the district. Tom mentioned art, but also just in terms of the materials and form. So here's the view I think that you've seen before, kind of looking at it both in the north-south, but also the kind of east-west direction. And really thinking about the 16-foot through zone, but also creating a distinct number of spaces, the market space where, you know, food is kind of spilling out, food and wares in that area. And then in the middle, really this pedestrian lounge where that paving actually goes out into the parking lot, and there is a potential for kind of festival uses. All of that is on the same grade, similar to a festival street. And then over on the north side, really that cafe zone, and there you can see that ramp that goes down to meet grade. So views, just as you kind of go through, I think the edge definition was also really important for us. We need to meet that L2 standard, but we really want to strengthen that architecturally. The views in, as you kind of go through, temporary canopies perhaps at the south side as you kind of move through the space. The permanent structure, which could have heaters, tables, and chairs. You see the bike racks over there up against the building, and really that curbless condition. And then also looking back as well, and you can see there with a series of bollards, it really creates kind of a large, open, flexible zone. And then this is the area where you see the ramp going down as well as the outdoor cafe. And then the view back. And then again that edge definition along the streetscape. You know, one thing to mention, too, as we compare this to EcoTrust, is within that 20-foot parking zone, about a quarter of it is actually landscape and stormwater use. This edge definition continues both along Raleigh and Quimby.
So I'll talk about the mixed-use building now. And as Jeff mentioned, we're not quite as far along on the mixed-use building as the warehouse, but you know, there are key strategy for the mixed-use building. As Tom mentioned, we spent a lot of time studying key successful precedents of retail to integrate into the building, taking cues from architecture from throughout the district. We've created specific and individual storefront sizes. We've varied the streetscape along 21st, as Kara mentioned, with the modification. We're providing kind of key outdoor, you know, spaces along the edge of 21st, then we're pushing the building back. Celebrating the corners, we're trying to design at human scale. We're providing pedestrian multi-use outdoor spaces, integrating art, landscape architecture, and stormwater systems into the building, using high-quality materials, brick, stucco, and fiberglass windows. And we're locating the residential parking below grade. Some of the early precedents that we looked at for this project, we looked at, you know, when we successful resident or retail districts and studied the kind of patterning of the storefronts and what was working. And what we found is that there were a lot of really narrow bays that kind of alternate in height, style, color, materials, and that a lot of buildings above those bays were kind of rooted to those bays and grew out of those, and you know, it provided the massing. And the retail bays really kind of provided the massing for the upper stories. More examples of that, the image on the left is, you know, what we've kind of looked at in that case is what this district could look like if it was built out on both sides. It is kind of a unique condition to build this building in this context and having it be first. So we spent a lot of time thinking about what that patterning and providing context for the future development. This is the first time we've shown you kind of a plan of the spaces on 21st. And so those individual small narrow spaces along 21st that we're trying to be more prescriptive about in terms of sizing. We do have a variety of sizes, but in general they are slightly narrower base. This diagram shows kind of the alternating heights of the storefront. So we've studied having the top of the storefront line kind of bounce up and down with clear story windows in some cases. You know, in other cases, it's kind of a lower punched opening. And then having the upper stories of the building, which we are still studying the kind of articulation of, respond to those bays as they come down and really be rooted to the ground through those retail bays. A series of vignettes that show the kind of development and progress of the bays. And, you know, the really alternating materials, different canopy types, whether they're steel canopies or fabric canopies, clear story windows versus punched openings, kind of alternating the size of the storefront widths, styles, kind of really trying to provide a true variety. And then the corner plaza or the corner courtyard on 21st and Raleigh. And looking down 21st, we're also really exploring a deep facade. So kind of having, you know, really bringing the brick to the ground, having the, you know, brick buildings be a little bit more heavy boned on the base with the retail storefront set back. And then also similar to the way that we're pulling the building back on the corner of 21st and Raleigh, the residential kind of lobby entrance gets pushed back as well and is further articulated with a darker brick color above. So similar to those precedent studies that we looked at, we're letting the building massing of the upper stories kind of take its cues from those retail widths, and it's starting to break down the mass. And at this point, we're looking at a couple different color brick options, you know, stucco, wood, you know, some gasket moves between the bays, but really kind of keeping the narrow bays with small reveals between them. The corner from 21st and Quimby, another corner gesture. We've made the top of the building. This is the highest point of the building. We are limited to 75 feet based on the construction type, but we are able to have the facade or the parapet line kind of alternate up and down about approximately 3 feet. And so the highest part of the building will be on this intersection, which is Kinney Quarter to the new park, new plaza. Also kind of alternating and providing interest at the top of the building, we have a six-story amenity deck that kind of is carved out of the six-story massing, which will have views of both Forest Park and downtown. As Kurt mentioned, there's kind of, you know, the screening opportunities that may turn into art that can kind of weave their way along and create the screen and then tie into the warehouse. A view looking back at the west side of the building, and here you really get a sense of how the parking area for New Seasons kind of slips underneath the residential building. So approximately half of the parking in this area is tucked underneath in a structured parking. It's a C-shaped building with a center courtyard that has a second deck that covers that parking area, and then also that covered area kind of slides over and covers the ramp that goes down to the residential area. That entire deck area will become a green roof and a stormwater system, so all of the stormwater for the top of the building will kind of flow down, go through a filter at this level, and then come out to the street. You also kind of get a sense of some of the landscape that Lengel Hansen will develop as the screens and integrated with kind of an art move of maybe a Corten screen or fence or something along the edge. A view from the other corner, looking back, so this is the ramp that would down to the residential area. You see the amenity deck up on the sixth story, the through zone in the corner here, coming through the pedestrian accessway. All of the stormwater for the parking lots will flow through planters that are in this zone and then go to dry wells. And then finally, a kind of bird's eye perspective, and this shows what the district could look like, kind of built out, and we've just put really kind of simple massing on all four corners. But an idea we have is to kind of notch out these corners to really kind of celebrate this intersection of 21st and Raleigh. And final image of the building, you know, showing the artwork in the corner, the building pushing back.
So there's a lot to talk about because it's like three separate projects. I mean, that's how we discuss it at ourselves. So obviously welcome some interest.
Well, we only have 8 minutes, though.
Can I just have one? There's a couple closing thoughts here, just to keep in mind. Okay. You know, this has been, as you know, along the winding road to get to where we've been. And I didn't mention that we spent a better part of the year of that time negotiating with national grocery stores, regional grocery stores, local grocery stores, trying to find the right mix. Project probably died a half dozen times during that time, and it died over parking, as it always does with grocery stores. The right amount of parking, the right store size. It died over access. It died over visibility. It died over challenges with the existing building. And, you know, it also died over the uncertainties of the master plan as it was moving and, you know, the access ways were changing and sidewalk widths were changing and heights and different requirements were happening. So, you know, we tread water for a while. We're thrilled to have New Seasons on board. Ultimately, we selected them so they've asked the right match for this project. It is an emerging district. They've kind of shown the willingness to share the risk with us here in building a very large project in an edge location. It's not what you would consider a main location for a traditional retailer. So there's been some of those challenges, and there's been a lot of talk about the master plan, but I just like people to keep in mind that the master plan is not going to be realized overnight. It's going to take 5, 10, 15, 20 years for the district to be evolved. And this is a first step, but it's a step in a long road. And it's going to take a while for a lot of the ideas that people have kind of put forth on the project to be realized. And this is kind of the first piece. And I think they've shown great willingness to be that champion as well. And they believe in the district that we're going to get a lot of use from, we're going to get a lot of visitors from pedestrians, from bikes, from transit, from the future streetcar. And that justifies what is a very low parking ratio for a grocery store. It's less than 2.5 per thousand here, and it's been one of the struggles. So the parking, I know, is a topic of concern, but it's been a key ingredient, as it always is, in trying to get a mixed-use grocery-anchored project to be viable.
Okay. Thank you. So you want to ask a few questions then? Tad, you want to go first?
I have two.
You have two, okay.
Only two. You know, every teenager in Northwest Portland learned to drive in that parking lot. So I don't know where they're going to learn to drive
now.
That's
true. But that's true.
Everybody took their kids there on Sunday to learn to drive. So what are you going to do about that? That's number one. The second question is, did you try other locations for the bottle return? It's kind of stuck on the side. I know that's a tough one, but...
Yes. We got bottle return issues here.
I'll just interject on that. I mean, having
where the services go in a grocery store.
Yeah.
Big challenge with an urban grocery store. Quinby, so much by its nature, is a service street. There's a big distribution building across the side. There's an office building with no entrances on Quinby. So it's somewhat... became that way. Where's the back of this project? There isn't really a good back, but it has to go somewhere.
There's opportunity.
We've consolidated it, I think, and we didn't spend a lot of time talking about it, but
so does it.
We try to put it all there. It does have a door that comes down. We've tried to be careful about how we do that, but
so it's a niche.
It's a niche.
It's a niche. Okay.
With a door.
Okay.
And one of the other things, just on that note, having the retail on the back really helps solve grocery. Right, it puts the back of house on a demising wall, and you don't have to deal with it on the other sides. I know you've seen other grocery stores, and that's a big struggle with fixturing a grocery store and keeping the ground floor windows active. Something we spent a lot of time working on.
That was two. How are they going to replace the driving, and what they do with
okay.
it?
Okay.
So
you have two questions?
I have one.
Okay.
So the parking underneath the residential building, that is public parking, right? That's for the grocery store?
The grocery store.
And then just below, just the secured parking is just for the
tenants.
So the amount of screening, and I know these are just the first passes, but the amount of screening you're showing
looking underneath the buildings about what you can get, because those are all openings have to be double wide both ways on both sides to get underneath that parking garage.
This is something that as we go through the design process and as we've gone through it so far, we're trying to support without a whole lot of signage, a way that people can intuitively figure out that is grocery parking on that level. So you can see we've kind of at this point proposed painting that that garage, inside the garage, all kind of green, which is a color that kind of really has become kind of a signature brand for new seasons in that situation. So at this point, and then for safety and the idea that people can kind of really easily access that, we've kept it pretty open. But I'll be the first to tell you, Ben, that we haven't done the engineering on this building quite yet. So we show a few columns coming down in that area, but I suspect might be some more. So yeah, the relationship of, you know, it might be something where we've got parallel walls, partially to kind of deal with some structural issues. When I say parallel, I guess I should say perpendicular to the grocery store, so that when you're looking from the grocery store out, you're looking into that garage. But when you're from the street and looking kind of from the side, it might close that garage up a little bit more. And I suspect it'll close down. I mean, we've gone back and forth on this thing, and I think we'll continue to study it. So get your 2 cents in.
Sure. And then just following up on that specifically, the access down to the parking garage below and the decision to pull that green roof out over that access point, it's a big move. So does that have to be, I guess that does have to be secured parking down underneath that area. And did you explore other ways to do that secured parking other than that pretty large structure just to essentially get a gate on it?
You guys can jump in too, but we did look at a lot of different options, and it was one of the areas that I think started to come together towards the end. We looked at a more enclosed structure, so it was more cordoned off. It just felt really clunky that there was this kind of structure sitting in the middle of the parking, and just having it more open, again, for safety, and making it more inviting. I mean, having that big plate float down, I think, you know, having that big eco roof, that's a big stormwater planner that we didn't mention for the roof water for the building. Felt like the right move. It helped kind of cascade down. It ties a little bit into the plaza. When you stand up in the apartments looking down, I mean, that whole view seeing the different graphic qualities of that plaza was something that we considered. Like Jeff mentioned, there's still more articulation to go through. How much screening? How do we deal with lighting? I mean, those are all things that we're trying to do. I mean, we're certainly, our intent is to have the lighting nice and safe, but not glaring like you see in a lot of parking garages. So, I mean, there's all those different layers that we're going to start to get into. But we did go through, this isn't the first pass, we did go through a lot of different options.
I think, too, Ben, the idea is that the gate will probably be down at the bottom of the ramp, and that to just control traffic up above, we may end up with an arm. Bruce tells me that he knows of a 10-second garage door. But we think even having that garage door further down, it's good just for the apartments above with acoustics. So, I mean, this is an area, as we move ahead, we'll start looking at a little bit more.
I think we're also looking at plantings on the green roof that can be seen from the pedestrian level, so they're taller grasses that can kind of rise up and give a little, you know, kind of visual interest to the green roof.
Is the whole power grid getting put under the ground in this area?
Yeah. I wish we could do that, but we have been starting conversations with PGE about underground lines on Raleigh, which is primarily what we have there. There aren't any on Quimby on our side. The ones on 21st are on the other side. Those are main distribution lines. I don't think those are going away because they feed a lot of Northwest Portland. But for our project right here, they're on the other side. There are some transmission lines also on 22nd. They're up high that can't go away, but we think we can underground everything along Raleigh to clean that all up. We're just in the initial stages of that, and it's going to have to feather into a larger conversation with Conway because they feed other blocks and they feed other things, but we're starting those conversations.
It would be nice to get out in front of
there's a lot of spaghetti up there, and it's an old part of town, and stuff is overtaxed, and we just see that time and time again in Northwest that there's a lot of utility and infrastructure work that comes with it.
Right. And it's true, and the one thing that I've kind of learned the hard way is if you piecemeal it with PGE or PB&L, you end up with a piecemeal solution. So it almost would be, and I'm sure you guys are in it, but for Conway, for everybody to be part of that right now, actually a year ago to start, I'm sure you have, but just if they can not, because they'll just keep kicking it back every block development to deal with it and pay.
There are some bigger moves that we're going to have to come to agreement on how those are going to costs are going to be shared.
And just in seeing the images that you put up, it has such impact on the architecture too. I mean, when you put the wires back across this nice architecture, it really.
So here we wouldn't have them anywhere on our street, which is except for, you know, if we can get all the stuff on Raleigh down, that is a big thing. I hate having the transformers right out somebody's unit. I mean, it's never a good thing.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions? No?
So, yeah, sorry. So the new seasons, 2.5 per thousand for grocery stores, is that standard for new seasons? Because they seem pretty low.
It's like 2.3, and it's low, and it's even low for them. I mean, they've been, again, I think, buying into the fact that they're going to get trips from other modes of transport, more so than others.
Locations are at 2.
We're a little bit lower than most of the other new seasons locations.
This is low.
Lower.
Because they're pretty low.
And they're pretty low in all other areas, too. It's been that balance. I mean, the size of the store, how much parking can support it, it's definitely a topic of a lot of discussion there. There's a certain size of the store that needs to be for economic reasons. So the parking is pretty important at this stage. Getting the streetcar in there will help later, of course, as the district evolves more and we have more residents in a close proximity. That's going to help take pressure off. But right now, you're kind of in a transition period. There is a lot of street parking in the evenings and the weekends. It's not so much during the day, but there is overflow. Our also hope is, as the other districts get evolved, if there are off-peak sharing opportunities and other parking solutions. Parking, as you know, is going to be a huge issue for Conway to solve before a lot of the other blocks get developed. It kind of all flows together.
So speaking to that issue with regards to the parking, I'm not clear, the 40-foot pedestrian access corridor, does that include that first bay of parking?
No. The 40-foot is dedicated.
I thought you suggested somewhere in your presentation that you had convertible space.
Yeah, that's the parking zone. That's the 20-foot zone there in the front.
That would increase you to 65.
That brings you to the 60.
Right. Yeah.
That would be your 40-foot line right there.
Right.
Then you're in this 20 zone. So what we've essentially done is taken that 10-foot zone from the grocery side and lumped them both together.
So what I heard you ask a minute ago is what's too big, what's too small, versus what's right-sized for that pedestrian corridor.
Could we maybe ask Jill to come up? Is that possible and join you as your team? Okay. And then she can give her interpretation, understanding.
There you go. Hi, I'm Jill Long, 601 Southwest 2nd Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97204. I'm an attorney with Lane Powell, and I'm here today on behalf of Conway. I worked closely with Conway as land use counsel throughout the master planning process. I'm pretty familiar with the document. And we've been working with Tom and his team as they work on this beautiful project. And you've got a letter in your packet from Craig Barretts. Conway's very supportive. They're extremely excited about the project. I think it's just a beautiful interpretation of the master plan and wonderful for this site. I would be happy to answer questions. I could talk a little bit about the access ways just to kick it off and then be open to questions if that sounds okay.
Yeah.
So the guidelines and the standards are the approval criteria for looking at a project under the master plan. So those are the approval criteria for you to look at as you're reviewing the access ways. That comes in Section 7D of the guidelines, and then I think it's Standard 8E is the one standard related to the pedestrian access ways. Excuse me. The graphic that you mentioned is certainly in the master plan. It's an illustrative graphic of one way that a pedestrian accessway could be developed. And when we went through the master planning process, we very deliberately didn't feel that we wanted to be prescriptive on the pedestrian accessways, but to let the guidelines really dictate whether or not an accessway was successful, because that connection to the adjacent uses, depending on how the block developed. We did talk a little bit about parking in the accessways through the master plan process, and we got some pretty clear feedback that without looking at a specific design, it would be too hard and too premature to say this works, this doesn't. And that really goes for anything that might be in outside of the 40-foot clear width. We talked about stoops. We could see how that would work, gardens. But there were other things that we knew could come up through creative design process that we couldn't make an exhaustive list. Right. So the master plan isn't really meant to make an exhaustive list. It doesn't preclude surface parking, and it's really looking at the guidelines in this particular project. And
sure. The four or five times your group came to present.
A lot, yeah.
I thought we were fairly consistent about surface parking and our reaction to surface parking. There were consistent comments about that. Anyway.
I agree with you. I mean, I think there were consistent concerns that how would this work? Could this work? And, you know, the document that ultimately was approved doesn't preclude surface parking. It does allow it, but it has to fit within the guidelines in the master plan. And we think that the guidelines in 7D and the guidelines in the entire master plan are very robust, and they give a lot of really robust narrative language to help define what we're looking for in a pedestrian access way and in
so
the entire master plan.
What about the graphic that says, Ben found it, that his parking says none in the pedestrian access? What's that? Where did that... I guess, how does that
why is it there? Sure. I believe it's an illustrative example. If you
It's not the drawing. It's the actual bar chart.
Right.
Right. Okay.
I think it describes what's seen in the drawing there. It's not supposed to be prohibitive, but rather sort of like a key to what's in the drawing right there, showing that there is no parking there. Carrie, can you remind me what section that's in? It's in the transportation section. Right.
It's like page 90.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, it...
97.
Right. Tom's got it for me here. Thanks. There are countless... Well, not you could count them. There are a plethora of sections like this and examples throughout the master plan that aren't exhaustive as the only way, but an example of one way that could work. Frankly, you know, that example would work only if it also met the guidelines, and that would depend on adjacent uses, programming, and all those other things. So I recognize it would probably be, you know, this is the first project that's going through the master plan, and we're going to find stuff, I think, that, you know, in retrospect, maybe we could have added a little clarity to. But it was definitely intent, and I know we talked a lot about parking and that it was a concern. And, you know, I think the concept that we all came to was that we'd have to look on a project-by-project basis under the guidelines to make sure that it was working.
Sure. You know, David, I didn't have the pleasure of sitting on commission at the time that some of these discussions were had. But I think based on the history of where commission has been with this, when we looked at things like South Waterfront Plan, where we had green streets, where we were very supportive of setting up kind of pedestrian access ways down to the river that were weighted towards the pedestrian, bicycles, that type of stuff, but didn't preclude automobiles, and that what were the things that we could do that would be supportive where the automobile was seen, at least in the way that the detailing or the materiality or even the visual cues of how you got through those areas, where the car was more of an invited type thing in the situation. Now, granted, here we've got a parking type situation where there are likely going to be cars there a fair amount of time. It is a grocery store. People are coming in and out. But we've been careful, and obviously in this situation, although we've got, I think it's 15 stalls, 14 stalls on that side, you know, four of them are part of our handicapped stalls. They're not going to be filled completely. We've tried to intermix with the stormwater in that area, and then with paving and kind of a curbless design in that area. The intent here is really to kind of keep it more geared towards pedestrian in that area, with easy flow through in that situation. So, I mean, I think it's very easy to jump to the conclusion that we should never have parking or surface parking in this situation. But since we are kind of in a situation here with a specific use, a grocery store, in an area that's more of an edge, I think that this is something that, you know, we want to kind of present to you guys to see, is there a workable solution? And are there other things that we, you know, what we've proposed here is to keep it pretty open. I mean, would more screening be something that could help along that edge? You know, just we showed you some of the kind of the in that 20-foot zone, kind of, you know, maybe a market day on a weekend morning. You know, are those things like that right. could maybe help this along?
Right. Well, the thing that after just hearing a couple of your statements that activate the pedestrian access way with energy and vitality was one of your goals, I think. And so how does parking do that would be a question. And then intimacies that you mentioned and the intimacy between pedestrian and car, how does that work? So for me, the project is brilliant, absolutely supportable, except this one thing. This one thing. And the one thing centers on 2.3 per 1,000 square feet of grocery store. And so how can we have that work? Because that's what it all boils down to at this point. You've got a client that wants to be here. You want them to be there. We want them to be there because it's a great start it's just this 60-foot thing and 2.3. So how do we work a solution here? Because anyway, I don't preach here, but you know,
well, can I make
ahead.
It?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I just, activation. There's nothing more active. You've been to a new season's at 5:30 or something. There's nothing more active than the people flooding from, you know, their cars trying to get in and out of the grocery store. I think you'll see, no matter what you do up and down this greenway, this pedestrian access way, this will be the most active point
sure.
of that entire thing.
Absolutely.
Because of the parking.
Right, right. Right. The question is, should that be in the right of way?
So,
or should it be?
Can I,
go ahead.
Here's my take on that, too. And I'm starting from the point that this seems to completely satisfy, from my perspective, the intent of this, which is to create public access way where you can, one, get all the way through the block easily with bike or, you know, walking or on bike. Right. And you lose, if you look at that graphic, there's a right-of-way that gives away, you know, 20 feet of the 60-foot right-of-way. And what they've done is they've actually kind of, instead of having that on both sides, they aggregated it over onto the side where the parking is and left a 40-foot wide swath that includes the cafe seating and access. So you net the same amount of kind of occupiable space. It's just whether it's got stuff on both sides or whether...
Well, it's about what's on that side.
I agree.
What is on that side? So let's hold that thought because we're kind of getting into our next phase. And I think what we need to do at this point is take testimony. And so is Paul Gustafson still here? You're a very patient man. Thank you for your commitment to...
Where do I go?
So come up here.
Oh.
Yeah, they're going to vacate. You state your name and your address. And then you have three minutes.
Okay, yeah, I'm Paul Gustafson. I live at 2154 Northwest Quimby Street, and I am the lone residence facing the Conway property. I've owned that property since 1990. So I do face the entire project. I think I'm very pleased with it for the most part. I think we knew this day would come eventually as far as that Conway area being developed. My only concern is that when I read through the master plan, the two caveats for the public were that we were going to have this promenade 60-foot wide pedestrian access way that would tie the whole development together. And it's mentioned many times in the master plan that this whole development is trying to discourage the use of the car and that it's going to be more based on access with bicycles and pedestrians, and that it's one of the main tenets is that the car is going to be subjugated. And right out of the gate, it seems like this whole 60-foot-wide promenade is being completely compromised by surface parking. And I don't see how, in any sense, you can say that surface parking is compatible with a pedestrian thoroughfare. It seems to be completely contradictory to it, to me anyway. And I think that's pretty obvious. And if you have to live with that, so be it. But I just think it sets a bad precedent for the other areas that are going to be developed later on, that those pedestrian access ways will also be more easily compromised by other developers if you let this one initially get compromised right out of the gate. So that's my only concern. And I think that we can call it anything you want or say we're going to have mixed use or flex use. It states pretty clearly in the master plan that one of the priorities is that it discourages automobile use. So I think that's all getting kind of jettisoned out the window. That's my only comment. And I'd just like you to think about that when you approve it. And then also, I do want to mention that I was not aware of the bottle return.
Okay.
On that wall. So
now you are.
Facing, I'm curious to see if that's
facing your residence.
Is that from your house? Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's my only concern. But I'm generally really, really happy because... we realize that, this area is going to be developed, eventually. And I think what we're going to be facing is going to be very pleasant. But I just thought that, we should at least try to see what we can do there.
Thank you. Any questions?
No.
Thank you. Paul? Thank you, Paul. And let's see. I have to get my cheat sheet here. All right. So that was the only opposition. I actually did it because Paul is the only one here. Normally we do in favor first and then do opposition. But... you can't. I have to read this. Thank you. All right.
And
this one. All right. So there's more opposition. Or they got tired. Okay, so this is from Dave Sobolik, organization representative is Fit Right. He's at 2258 Northwest Raleigh. He says, or asks, I would like to know how C.E. John will manage subcontractor parking on behalf of myself and my neighbors located on Raleigh between 23rd and 22nd. We've been hit very hard by the construction and lack of parking for our customers. This available parking has been consumed by subcontractors. What kind of security can you give us as it has been 1 year and another 12 to 18 months of major construction, road closures, and no parking may put some of us out of business? Okay. And Gustav Cruz with the Northwest District Association, no address here. But he says, good afternoon. My name is Gustavo Cruz. I'm testifying on behalf of the Planning Committee for the Northwest District Association. I am a member of the Planning Committee and a current board member and former officer of the NWDA. First, on behalf of the committee, I would like to thank C.E. John for working with us in a very collaborative and responsive fashion. The individuals and groups involved in this project have worked well together, and the committee is very appreciative of the responsiveness shown to the neighborhood concerns. Second, I would like to summarize the committee's comments to the most recent designs and images provided by the committee, or to the committee. Some of the comments may have been raised in prior presentations or testimony. Item one, some committee members still feel that the plaza area remains more of a parking area than a true plaza, and they are doubtful that it will serve as a functional plaza or have much of a plaza feel because of the traffic flow. The parking on 22nd Avenue, that's the head-in parking, is a poor use of frontage that could be more active and engaging. Third, the top floor of the mixed-use residential building should be pulled back, and this would be consistent with guidelines for that area. Fourth, the southeast corner at 21st and Quimby could include an acknowledgement of and or gesture toward the nearby square that's planned for that northeast corner opposite it. And the last item, there are some concerned committee members among committee members about the retention of street trees and whether more could be retained. Despite these comments, the committee remains supportive of the plans for Block 296, and it appreciates the willingness of C.E. John to incorporate the committee's comments into their plans. Thank you. Okay. So you can come forward and rebut as you feel necessary, and then I will that's it, actually, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Good. So no one's in favor.
Did the neighborhood association say they're in opposition?
No. They said they were very supportive, but had these suggestions. Right. So I'm not sure if that was in favor.
They've been supportive. I mean, those were some comments that were raised, but I think we had a good meeting with them.
Oh, they are.
Weeks ago, and continue to work with them.
I've just been corrected. They're actually all in favor. Who would have known? You know,
the only thing I'd clarify.
Charge.
Paige, why don't you just read them next time?
Yeah. Paige for mayor.
And you can see why I'm not the chair. Okay.
The only thing I would clarify there is the comment about the stepping the top floor back. There is in the code, it says above 75 feet, the top floor should set back, and we're at 75 feet. So right, we didn't. Well, and we are setting back, as you know, in a couple of those areas anyways. But
okay. Yeah, I think that, you know, we're still in this kind of initial part of the design process on that building. And I think you're seeing the overall massing. You're kind of seeing the materiality of, I mean, our goal is really to get all brick on that building and have kind of the unique storefronts and do this in a way that we can afford fiberglass windows and, you know, an upgrade on window that's still energy efficient. And so, but as we kind of get to that upper edge and talk about cornice and, do we start, you know, playing with different brick patterning, different reliefs, all that type of stuff? We just haven't got there yet, but I think that's something that's going to come down the
considering.
Road.
I would say for the windows as well, we haven't really got into the fine line of the units. They're probably going to
modeling.
They'll change a little bit as
what you showed us imagery. Your imagery of those storefronts and those bays shows a lot of diversity between bays, and you know, even in the language of the particular facade within a bay. And then I see images you've created that are pretty much the same image each bay of your six-story building.
On the upper floors.
And I think
that's, like Jeff had mentioned, we haven't quite got the level of detail on the unit plans. There is, you know, there is an intentional, and this is good for feedback from you guys, is a lot of those images that we showed have a pretty simple treatment on the above areas, and there's some repetition, and there's a rhythm to that, which is appealing. How much is too much is a question. Right. You know, as we get into actual unit design, do the windows start to congeal in certain areas? Is there balconies? Is there other things that start to provide more flavor on there?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's to come.
Those are the things that are going to be to come. But I think the palette and the idea is something that we've gotten comfortable with. We've looked at a lot of iterations, different color brick, different things where it's gotten too busy or too cutesy. And I think we're starting to kind of gel with the language that starts to work.
Any other comments?
Sure.
I was just going to say, it's interesting to see Jill up here. It's interesting to see the author so soon back after offering the saying that. So, I mean, just as the group, I mean, all of us, we were just here saying yes to this and kind of commending the group for how well it was done, and then the very same group is saying, "Well, you know, we don't want to do that." Per se, and for me, I think the project is really handsome. I think all the moves you guys have made today are beautiful. It's not so much. It's not only the fact that those 16 or so parking spots are in the new kind of pedestrian way, but I think it also just tips that parking surface into becoming surface parking. It's that extra band of 20 feet deep of parking that makes a couple of your perspectives look like, wow, we now have surface parking in the newest part of Portland. And a big move, surface parking, especially when you see so clearly under the depth of the apartment building. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of seeing two things are getting jeopardized here. The very plan that was just approved, mm-hmm. plus setting a precedent for surface parking on that big of a scale. And I think, honestly, just losing that 20 feet will reduce the couple perspectives you have that much more to say that it's not setting that precedence. Two precedents. One, as the gentleman said, for everybody will then put parking in that right away. So we might as well just say it's 40 feet and just change everything that was just written, as well as the imagery of that large of a scale of surface parking is okay too, which I don't think that's anybody in this room's intent. So I agree with Commissioner Work. It's that one tenet, as important as they are, driving that for the next 30 decades, or three decades, rather. Yeah,
right. I think decades. You've actually...
30 decades. You know. So that's, you know, my... But the overall project, I think, is beautiful. And, Jeff, I think the moves on the apartment building are fantastic to date, and Alan. So that's you know, the overall thoughts.
So, Tad, you want
to... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Ben. Yeah, it's an exemplary project so far. We know you'll fix everything when you come back. No, it's really it's nice to see something like this. Yeah. It's really heartwarming. I think you've done a disservice to your argument by the way you've illustrated these three zones in front of the building. Just from a urban design standpoint, they are reading so much like the store. You call them a pedestrian lounge, yet there's not really clear passage for pedestrians completely through that space. The benches are aligned not with the flow of how somebody would walk. So my sense is that you could do a better job of arguing your case by looking at actually what you've placed in that zone. The market stalls could be arranged differently. They could be diagonal. In other words, I think it's as much a perception of a... In other words, this is not a pedestrian clear zone access promenade. This is the front of a grocery store, yet you've got the space. So I think that if you ask yourself, what is a good pedestrian access way? How does it behave? What does it look like? And how does one move through it and apply it to this? That you might be able to cheat a little bit more than you have now.
Well, if we could hire you, Tad, but we will very soon not have quorum. We've knocked two commissioners out already.
I just want to point out on the design of this right now, there's a long way to go with this structure and with whatever that furnishing zone is. You know, is it a solid cover here? Is it, does it transmit more light? You know, there's, this is more gestural at this point, so your point is well taken, and I would be, I mean, my team can tell me that so far I've said, okay, that's the benches, and now I'll just slide. I've complained about the same thing.
And it's the spatial arrangement of those things to graphically begin to suggest pedestrians can walk through here rather than a pedestrian looking at it and saying, oh, yep, this is a storefront.
Right, and so, I think that's the key that you bring up. Right.
How is it perceived?
Is it a public right-of-way, or is it an correct extension of the store?
Correct.
Well, it's right, multimodal as well, right? So we've got traffic conflicts between bags, groceries, and bicycles.
Because right, you know, right now it reads as a plaza or wide space between the grocery store and their parking lot. So it's part. It's
well, there's only a little bit that's a promenade, and that's right, between the planter and the bollard. And I'm saying that.
Right.
And just for reference there, this right here from that line right there to this line right here is the 16 feet. That's the required through zone.
Right.
We pushed the bollards back a little bit into that area. We've got the 18-foot deep parking space in that area. You know, and you know, we could push this. There's stuff that we can push and pull. And this is, I hate the word placeholder, but really this is nothing more than we got to get something on the
drawing. Well, my point is that's part of the discussion, I think, in really resolving what this access way is, and whether it's public or perceived as private has a lot to do with the signals that you give of that space.
Again, I think another important element with these bollards that, you know, could be these custom-designed bollards integrated with lighting, with banners, it's those types of things that, when we come back, it's what we're going to really want to start to really kind of develop and get to that finer grain detail in that situation. There's no doubt that there are store uses that because it's a grocery store, end out in that area. But the sense really that some, you know, when we get what we keep calling the market zone down at the other end, that the store can kind of pull some of that display out, some of that vegetable display out or flower display out into that area. It's really intent in that area. And how we start to identify these, rather than having one room that's 60 by 200, is that the intent is to break it down into a series of rooms in that area. And granted, right now all you're seeing is kind of a color that's trying to do that. I mean, there will be a whole other level of detail that comes up with that. And I would say kind of that intuitive wayfinding, you know, is there kind of a gutter line that you kind of follow along there? Insofar as bikes, I just want to point out, I mean, it does say for bikes, and bikes are going to be welcome on this thing, but we've got a dead end at this side of the street, and we've got a dead end two blocks away. So bikes are going to certainly be using this for more kind of local access to stores and businesses. I don't think any of us think that this is going to be a true kind of commuter bike path that we're going to see heavy use that or a corridor in that sense.
By where the bike zone is, the master plan is not there.
Is that written in the master plan?
There is bike
In
terms of, you know, not a throughway.
There is a diagram. There is a bike plan. And Ben, I invited myself back up when you started talking about the master plan. It is unique that this has been so close in time, and I think it's a unique opportunity for us to get that reflection so early on. I did want to react a little bit to the concept that this project somehow doesn't or changes the master plan vision, because I don't think it does. And I understand why, when you look at 60 feet and you look at what's up here, if you kind of look at just that, it seems to be taking away maybe from what an interpretation could be. But the way Conway sees the pedestrian access way is it's 40 feet of throughfare with up to 20 feet of encroachment. And that encroachment, you know, we did talk a little bit about that during the master plan process, and we heard, you know, the commission say we would have concerns about parking, and we agreed that you couldn't really make a final determination about any of that until you looked at a project. And so this project...
Your team agreed?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. My recollection is we didn't push that conversation further to make a definitive decision about that, knowing that it was going to come before you and it was going to be a hard conversation and it was going to have to be really well designed, and that at the end of the day, the pedestrian access ways would have to meet the guidelines, would have to provide a certain amount of throughfare. But those encroachment opportunities could be really different for different kinds of uses. And, you know, this use is a grocery store. It's unique in that sense. And, you know, obviously that's a conversation that you're going to continue to have. But, you know, I do think it fits within the master plan vision. It doesn't stray.
Well, I think it fits it in terms of generic numbers when you're talking 40 feet and 20 feet and encroachment and stuff. But when you put that use to it, when in the master plan, the diagram is very passive use that encroaches. It's a balcony. That's the example that everyone chose to put in the report. Mm-hmm. And so that's a far cry from a parking lot of 12 to 14 spaces as your edge, not 10 feet, but 20 feet of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two elements here where the encroachment has now been combined onto one side and then changed in use from a porch to automobiles. So that's a pretty big jump.
It is, but in some respects, David, I mean, a porch is even more private.
Exactly. So I agree. But I guess the question, too, is the nature of it and the ability for it to be flexible is absolutely critical. Because every block's going to have its own piece. But flexibility and then wholesale change are two different things, it just seems to me.
And I think it becomes relative to the use. I mean, I really do. And we were talking a lot about residential uses when we looked at stoops and porches and gardens, and we didn't show a lot of examples of retail uses. And I think, you know, it's hard to say.
I don't think it becomes relative to use. I think it becomes relative to perception. My assumption would be that the intent of this guideline was to provide public permutation throughout the blocks. A person who is not shopping must feel welcome and must feel the connectivity. Jeff, mm-hmm. What is the space between the bollard and the front edge of the planter?
That right there is 16 feet. That's the through zone right there.
16 feet. And we're looking for 60?
No, 16.
16.
16 is
16 feet for the throughway.
Yeah.
And 60 overall.
60. That's where I'm.
And so, you know, I think how that.
40 overall.
40 is the access easement.
No, I'm talking about
building face to face.
60 right. Building face to face and 10 encroachment 10 into that 60.
40 is the pedestrian access.
Right.
Easement is 40 feet.
It's the 60 feet. I think the intent of the 60 feet is to provide light and air to that pedestrian way. And so it's locating, you've got to have 60 mm-hmm. feet between the faces of the buildings,
right.
Which they have. And then it's like, how do you, okay, now you got 60 feet. That's enough to get light and air now between all this. Now how do you divide it up? Okay, well, we only need 40 feet of zone that's going to be stuff. And then we got 10 feet left over that we're going to do something with. If it's residential, it's balconies or whatever. If it's commercial, there is no diagram for commercial. So what is it? And so I think in a condition like this, I mean, there are areas that suffer from having plantain along. If you stick to that diagram, that kills like retail or experience. If you plant 10 feet of plantain in front of that building and take 10 feet out the other side, it ruins.
But this is an anomaly, okay? So I think an anomaly can withstand some of that. But how many, I don't know, that's a good question that I'm about to ask. The idea of how much mid-block retailers are going to be? On the pedestrian access way. I don't know.
We don't know.
But mainly, people want to be on, unless you have service parking. So do those always go hand in hand? Is that what you're saying?
If you have
mid-block or center-block retail like this, then that's the entrance. That's what we're not going to really be too supportive of every project, I don't think, being facing everything or their main emphasis on the pedestrian right-of-way, right?
Is that
having
commercial?
A parking lot next to it?
Let's look at the master plan lays out what goes up and down retail use is, right?
Well, it doesn't. I mean, retail use, there are required retail use streets, and mm-hmm. there's a cap on retail square footage. So most likely you're not going to see a lot of mid-block pedestrian access way retail frontage onto the access ways because it's not going to be the highest and best use in the required and other
areas.
Well,
and then there's a limit on the amount of retail, and this is the biggest retailer that's going to be in there, right? Everything else is
going to
be
existing buildings here
like on 21st.
Dealing with, too. It's so, not new construction, too. I mean, it's a different, I think a different situation if you have two sides that are undeveloped. You've got an existing building that's right on the property line, so you've got that accommodation kind of forces it to one side. I just wanted to just one follow up, just one thing that David had mentioned before about you know, if you just say you honored the 60 feet and you had another building right up here next to this zone, then, you know, then the trade-off is the grocery store doesn't happen there and it doesn't face the pedestrian access way and it becomes a side yard. And we've been really focused about not creating dead spaces. I think there's a lot of nice green spaces in Portland that have, that are pedestrian. Go down South Waterfront, they're very quiet, they're very bucolic. They're dead, they die. Retail's never going to live there. I mean, and they're creepy places at night. We're trying to avoid that. So there is a trade-off there. Having it open, having some visibility there is a trade-off. We fully appreciate that, and how can we make it as good as we can make it and make it a singular, unique space. But there wouldn't be – I don't think it sets a precedent necessarily because each block's going to be different.
I think for me, just this image says a lot. If you took this image and actually put noses of cars all right there, which is that – that's what it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly at night, that would be headlights. And this is new season set up all over the city, and so we all know those areas. They're really kind of a strange interstitial space with headlights, dogs tied up, and it's a perfectly functional place, but it's not. It doesn't say like anything about plaza or thoroughfare. It's really it's active, yes, David, but it's not a connector, in my opinion. So at night, noses of cars that. Totally changes that perception. So I agree, Jeff, on when you said that when we talk about those, the flexibility of those spaces, I'm thinking director park, kind of a parallel parking on a different paving pattern, and it, then the car kind of works with the pedestrian well, and in that area, I think it succeeds. But in this, it's just bollards, headlights, kids, and it's not. It doesn't say to me the intent what we all wrote about 3 days ago and approved. So it's not. That's what I think is a little clash right here of what I think we're all after. I think and all of us are after it. We're just trying to get...
Well, on that very note, because it is something we talked about, I mean, we in speaking and working with the NWDA, too, there was about this concept of flexible zone of, okay, we can live with the parking there, but make it open so that it can be something else on other days, on festival events and things like that. And doing what you're saying, and my concern has been, too, is headlights, exactly. I mean, that's a very valid point. But you start to... buffer that off and you start to segregate it, then you lose the flexibility of expanding it later. So which is more important? I mean, I think you could easily do a low profile thing to deal with the headlights and close it off, but then you're locking yourself into a smaller space. So there's that.
Well, I'm
balance.
Saying get rid of it. I'm not saying put up a bush. I'm saying move it. So I'm just saying we have a little.
And if it was 60 feet, what does that get us there? I guess it's the
well, it
question.
Gets the headlights and the,
but if
that
the parking
problem
is
just
that far over, does it change anything? It just makes that space wider and.
Well, just to answer the question you just said is a problem of the headlights hitting the customer and not being able to flex into the intent of what was written 40 feet. So it solves that and does it without a bush and without bifurcating the public zone, the flex zone, and so it does that. So that's what I think if.
Again, though, Ben, to kind of get back to this notion of the headlight, and I guess I wouldn't say that I see it as a big problem. If these were residential stoops across the way, and headlights were looking right into people's living rooms, I think then I would say, gosh, then we have a problem. But, I mean, this, again, is an active kind of pedestrian zone where people are going to be crossing back and forth and crossing the other direction. And I don't see, you know, with a grocery store in that area necessarily that headlights suddenly come in and destroy that whole thing. We did earlier, just so you know, we did look at this where we provided much more screening, almost to the sense of like an L2 type situation with a 5-foot planter, you know, and plant the hell out of it and really block that thing off with the idea that, oh my God, we can't, you know, we don't want to see cars. And honestly, I mean, it to me went the wrong direction in that situation because then it really was, okay, here's this zone and here we're trying to hide a car. And then there's this asphalt parking realm beyond. Like a more standard kind of suburban type parking space in this area. Right. In this sense, I liken it more to a more European example where you acknowledge the fact that there's going to be cars there. It's like you go to any plaza in Europe. I mean, a lot of plazas, during the week, it's business. You park the whole thing, and the weekend comes, and down come all the, you know, the cars are sent off. It becomes the whole kind of seated area, you know, and everybody's in that plaza in that situation. Now, granted, I don't think we have control over how often there can be an event there. Can there be something on the weekends? But if you go to any new seasons, you see stuff going on.
You're not
going
to close down your parking for an event.
No.
People are shopping. They got to buy groceries. It's the weekend. Yeah. They work during. Yeah. I mean,
but I'm acknowledging that I don't have control over that situation. Yeah. But we're not precluding that, I guess, with what we're trying to do in this situation.
But the example you had of
a barrier wall or
the parking areas in Europe, those are public areas. And so they can close those areas, and they have control of them. And that's one of the lacking aspects of it. The New Seasons will control that parking lot. And the likelihood that they're going to have that on a regular basis seems pretty low. And so the part that the rub here is this urban-suburban friction, where you've got a suburban model in the first project in reinventing this neighborhood into a very urban neighborhood. And so it's not unlike the project we saw in Lloyd Center a few weeks ago that had a similar parking lot, drive-through, bank thing, urban-suburban conflict, the Marriott Hotel on the Pearl, urban-suburban kind of mix. And so I think we've consistently told people that the suburban heart in these projects don't work that well for us. And so how do we make it so that it does work, so it's less suburban, that car, pedestrian, and building interface aren't so direct? And so, I mean, we would probably, in this urban area, the central city, we would never propose a parking lot, I don't think, with a new project.
We did with EcoTrust.
So, huh?
I mean, we did with EcoTrust.
Well, I'm talking about this. Yeah, well, that's a leftover piece from an existing building, right? And it's similar to this. So how do you make it? Right. But that's different. It's got elevation change. It's got 10 feet of landscaping plus the stormwater thing. It's a totally different kind of element. Plus, it's almost hidden from the street. That you've got the ruin that you've left there. So it's a totally different expression. If you come back with something like that, that might work. But the way it is now, to me, and I don't know to how many other commissioners, it's so direct and so in conflict with what is trying to be created in the pedestrian access way that it just doesn't work right now. I mean, to me, it doesn't.
So the parking garage, Tom, only goes so far. What was that stop line? Why didn't you go all the way to the face of the why did you stop where you stopped with the parking garage?
Well, I mean, we're just providing the appropriate ratio for the residential parking over there. It's 0.75 for the residents. So, and trying to, you know, strike a line there that makes sense with how that works, staying out of the encroachment zones and so forth. There's, you know, a balancing act too. We're having how much plaza do you have over deck and so forth like that. There are cost considerations, but I mean, it fits within that zone.
I was just curious. Did New Seasons say if you don't get these 15 spots,
We're at the minimum. It's in the lease. I mean, it's a critical crossing point. Like I said, we've been on a long road, and this wasn't enough for many of the other.
Well, and it's within
there.
The maximum. I mean, it's within the maximum allowable.
And it's, you know, it is a reality. Grocery stores need parking. I mean, it'd be great if that wasn't the case. And they're certainly reliant on other people getting there by other means, but there's still a need.
I also wonder what urban. I mean. There are examples of suburban parking lots, and this is not that.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
How do you figure?
Well, I mean, the directness of what Ben's example, I mean, you're parking right up next to a pedestrian way and walking right in. I mean, how is it not?
Is there?
What makes? Well, okay, so what's the difference between a suburban and an urban parking lot?
That's what I was going to ask you.
Well, I mean, I think
you park on the street and walk into a residence. The car is right there next to the sidewalk. You get out of your car, you get on the sidewalk.
It's parallel, right?
Well, I guess there's a question for Jill. Jill, are you and as Conway and mm-hmm. all the work that went in okay with setting the precedent that 20 feet of every green space that's designated mm-hmm. on here can be head-in park? I mean, essentially just saying. The authors are setting a precedent for 40 feet from now on.
Conway is very comfortable with this design. I do not believe that this sets a precedent that you could have parking throughout all the pedestrian access ways. I don't think it would.
What would be a lower? I'm just on following up on that. What would be a lower kind of benchmark for this head-in parking, you know, right? I mean, what would be worse as a parking situation into that right-of-way than this? How could you make it so it's a worse? I'm not disparaging. What would be not accepted if this isn't the point?
Well, obviously, you couldn't have buildings in that space. You couldn't have purely private space that cuts off the air and light. I mean, there's a lot of things that just strictly from the master plan technical standards, you couldn't have. What you could have in that space is sort of an open conversation. I don't believe that allowing parking near the grocery store in this concept that is going to continue to evolve, I think, a little bit. Obviously, you've given some feedback, and the team's going to go back and keep working on this. So we're not looking at the final iteration of it. But conceptually, that you could have parking encroach next to a grocery. This is the only time we're going to have a large piece of retail in this entire neighborhood. So I don't think there's really a precedential concern that the next project's going to come in and expect to have, you know, parking up to the door of a retail use at the pedestrian access way. I think this is unique. It's an adaptive reuse. It's special for this particular block. So Conley feels comfortable with that and that it doesn't undermine the vision for the pedestrian accessways throughout the entire.
But I can see a scenario with mm-hmm. the next one or the one after comes in, and they have a half block that backs up to the right of way, and they go, you know, I can't afford X number of underground parking spaces. I've got to have surface parking for this project to work. It's not connected with a retailer. It's connected with the 100 units that are on top of some retail. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, we go, well, you know, we did it over there. I guess we can do it here.
Yeah, as you know.
And then it just marches its way north and north and north mm-hmm. and south. And
every developer will want parking. I mean, regardless of grocery store or apartment building, every developer.
Right.
So what?
There has to be a long-term parking solution for
document,
the neighborhood.
What page is this not compliant with? Like, what piece of this is
well,
not?
I guess if you take the example diagram of the pedestrian right of way as just a potential and mm-hmm. and not prescriptive, mm-hmm. then anything's allowed. But it says in that, and if you're saying that that was just an example and mm-hmm. not, this wasn't intended to be the resolution, but the heart of it and the intent of it, you know, if parking,
in that thing
yeah. it says no parking, it says 10 feet from each side, you know, and all that. And so I guess if
well, 40 yeah. foot, a 40 foot,
yeah,
40 foot right away,
right away,
right.
With David, do we have a visitor?
Not anything is.
I don't know.
Sitting next to Kara.
Oh.
Can I make one comment?
Sure.
So I don't want to jump in front of you, Kurt, but I would not say anything is allowed. I would say everything has to meet the guidelines in 7D, of which there are 10 of, which are robust and very clear in the vision that they're trying to create, and that we leave it to the design team to come forward and meet those design guidelines.
Page
76. And we feel pretty comfortable that those design guidelines are going to protect the intent of the pedestrian accessways.
Those 10.
It seems it's kind of pervasive. I mean, it's in the graphic, mm-hmm. it's in the written bar. It's, yeah. I mean, this is a pretty strong thing too. I mean, just the banding,
mm-hmm.
the banding is showing the whole thing, and it's not as the pedestrian access way. And I don't think, you know, I don't think anybody would consider 20 parking spots to be the pedestrian access way. It's just,
and I understand. I mean, it's subject to interpretation, of course, and that's part of the process. Yeah. And I mean, I certainly wouldn't deny that, and I understand that there's going to be a variety of interpretations. But I think because there is a variety of interpretations possible, one reasonable interpretation under the language is that, given the grocery use, given the early adaptive reuse, the sort of pioneer to the neighborhood, that this really fits within the vision of the master plan.
I also think, why would you write that there's a 16-foot pedestrian right-of-way? Why would you write there's a 16-foot bike pedway? Yeah.
Because you might come in there with stormwater planners right. or landscaping yeah, and things like that.
Stuff.
But you might...
Because the intent is that you've got to maintain
a... Well, it's a for example. It's not a minimum. It's not a maximum. It's not an absolute. It's just saying you need to have throughways for peds and bikes. They need to be generous enough. You could have some other green stuff. It says, for example, 16 feet wide.
It says, for example?
Yeah, it's not a mandate. It's not a you can't do anything else. You could obviously within 60 feet, and I'll mention within 60 feet, that's what's required. And then there's an allowance to do 10 and 10. You don't have to do the 40. It's not saying you have to do 40, you have to do 10 on this side, 10 on this side. You have to do 60.
I
don't
see language that says building face is 60 feet. There's no reference in any one of these 10 guidelines that say anything about parking adjacent to or within that 60 feet.
No, it's
well, if you read the spirit of the whole
landscape
thing.
It's landscape, it's pedestrians, it's
right, the
open space.
The spirit of this thing, to me, in the photographs, which were carefully chosen, to me, they illustrate and describe a very pedestrian and bicycle-oriented and landscape and green, linear greens and pedestrian walkways that provide continuous informal green open spaces, helping to reduce the scale of large blocks. And the next nine go on to kind of reinforce that kind of character. Mm-hmm. And so I just am at a loss. I am being torn apart by this because I am so supportive of the project, but I it's hard for me to get behind the encroachment when I know it's opening the door to anyone else that comes in here and wants to do the same thing.
Well, you know,
guidelines do not specify that it has to be a straight swath. They talk about connection, they talk about accessway, but there's nothing that says it can't be,
sure,
the, again, perception of a pedestrian access.
Right.
This can be achieved.
Perception, but the standard does say you're allowed some encroachment. So we do have a little bit of a modification that we need to get over as well.
Right.
So I'll just remind you of that.
One of the example pictures is South Waterfront, which does allow cars to drive on it all the way, you know, as a thoroughfare. And it's an example of a successful pedestrian access way. So I do think, you know, cars create a certain reaction that's different for different people, and the success of how this is designed, and I think you're absolutely right on, the perception of a safe pedestrian environment is what we need to achieve. And I think there's multiple ways
The line in whatever movie it was about the sports guy, the Tom Cruise movie, where he says, "Help me, help you."
Yeah, Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire. We need
don't show me the money.
No. It's help me, help you.
I would add too, just on the issue of precedence, that, you know, Conway still has a say, obviously, in what happens on other blocks. They've been at the table from day one when we approached them on this project. They knew exactly what we proposed. We've been along for the ride. I think they looked at this block. Because of there's going to be certain compromises with the grocery store, that they saw this, they understood this. We were very careful about how we wrote the code. I mean, there was discussions. The folks at Conway.
Okay.
You know, and they still have control over as they sell these other parcels, and, you know, as they get developed, that, you know, standards and the selection of developers for what's being proposed, there's still a mechanism there. I mean, the code was written with some flexibility for this block that was intentional. There was discussions, and Kara can speak to this. There were discussions about very specific.
I don't agree with that comment at all. That the code was written with this block in mind.
The grocery
because,
store.
Because when you all came here and we told you that parking.
And it didn't get put in the code. It didn't
say.
Well,
I didn't do the final editing, so I don't know. I look at this page, and I think it did get put in there.
Yeah.
So we're into interpretation here, which is...
Well, I'm not sure I totally understand what you're saying. So could you clarify what you've... Just so I'm sure I'm reacting to the right...
Well, I guess a series of the pages in here to me.
Mm-hmm.
The example that was chosen, okay? And then on page 76, the guidelines, which are 10, I guess. And what I get out of this is there's no examples of parking in any of this. There's no... It talks about a linear green that is segregated from that type of encroachment. And we had a discussion about this when you came through and you were writing the master plan. And so there's a disconnect for me here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where it happened exactly. And so I don't know if staff can shed any light on that. Kirk, is that something you can shed light on, or is that...
I was going to stay on.
Are you just showing up?
That's a
lot
for a ride.
Yeah.
He wants to talk about other things beyond this.
All right.
But we heard clearly from you that you were not supportive of parking within the access, within the 60-foot wide access way, and I remember circling back to point out to make sure you understood that within the 60-foot there was parking, and it was a clear message from you that you were not supportive of that. We did not put the words parking is prohibited in access ways, but we did craft the language that we see here today, and as you're saying, it doesn't contemplate parking. It doesn't disallow it, but it's this language is written to be more of these green spaces, connectors for people and bikes. It seems pretty clear to me. I think the message was clear at the last time we were here. You were not supportive of the diagram that we're looking at today. It's getting designed now, but the mm-hmm. fact of the 18-foot-long stalls was an issue the moment you saw it.
And it sounds like the neighborhood heard that as well. I mean, based on that, the testimony, the neighborhood also heard that that was not going to be a parking zone?
You know, I do think it's interesting that it is recent in time, and we were all there. We weren't all there, but a lot of us were there, and we all kind of walked away probably with a different feeling. I did hear you say that, and my interpretation would be Conway didn't prohibit parking in the document, knew that this was going to be a difficult discussion, and the way our team walked away from it and the way we talked about it with staff is it's going to have to be really, really, really well designed so that it creates a clear linear green pedestrian path that makes a connection. Could that be done with parking there? And our thought was, yeah, it could be done, and it would have to be done the right way in a special way that allowed...
So maybe as Tad suggests, we're just not there yet.
Maybe that's
what we're all reacting to.
Part of the conversation.
I mean, even the presentation was a bit defensive out of the gates. You guys knew it was
right. Yeah. Except you put four-door sedans in your drawing.
We're going to put Priuses in next time. It's a hard challenge. I think it's a challenge, and I think that we knew out of the gate that it would be a hard challenge. And, you know, we've been working with Tom's team for a long time. Tom was here with us, and we wrote the language specifically not to prohibit it so that we can – try and meet that challenge, try and meet that design challenge. Sure. And I say that as the representative of the property owner who is supportive of this use for the catalytic nature. And a grocery store creates a neighborhood, and this is the way for us to really dramatically, out of the gate, begin to create a neighborhood. And that's an exciting proposition, and balancing the design challenges and
absolutely.
The parking challenges.
Absolutely, sure. I think everyone is 110% plus beyond ecstatic
that's
about
right.
So, David, what do you think about us just saying that, we look at these design examples and we can see they're not well-developed at this point with regards to this accessway.
Mm-hmm.
From my standpoint, my opinion is that 60 feet, I don't read anything in there that prohibits parking within that. No. I don't see anything in there that says it's allowed, and I wasn't part of the... conversation that developed this master plan, so I can come into this with a kind of almost a fresh perspective on if I were to read this language and somebody said, okay, you've got prescriptive design parameters here, these are your guardrails, I'd have no reason to think parking couldn't be part of that zone, you know. And I think, David, you kind of explained spirit and intent. 60 feet is for air and light. You know, it's very clear that building face-to-face 60 feet, but what happens within that zone to preserve a 16-foot actual travel corridor for multimodal transportation?
David's arguing that the document that you may be right, but the document doesn't reflect what this commission asked the document to represent.
Well, I wasn't part of that, so I'm coming into this plug my ears and cover my eyes because I don't see that. And so how did this get approved with this language if you're saying there was different conversation in prior commission hearings?
I don't know.
I mean, I think that we came to compromise on a lot of different elements of the master plan, and this was one, and it wasn't to – sneak parking in it was to allow for a challenging design discussion about it, which is what we're having today. And Tom was able to point out, you know, if you look at some of the, page 53 is a really good place to look for some of the guideline graphics that we have that talks specifically about parking areas in pedestrian accessways and shows a couple of pictures of accessways with parking in them. So, you know, it is a giant document. There is so much information in it, and it is understandable that looking at it piece by piece, it can become overwhelming. But I think it's great that this conversation is going on. I think what the intent of the master plan was to have these conversations and to find design solutions that allow us to bring the grocer. So I think this is a good first step towards that, and I think hopefully we'll be continuing that.
I know Kurt's really excited to say something, so okay. I'm gonna prompt.
Kurt Kruger for the record, and thanks. Haven't felt like a visitor, more like a part of the furniture after 4.5 hours, but we're having fun. I did want to talk about parking, but not this parking, just to add salt to the wound here in the conversation. The 22nd Avenue head-in parking is not being well received by folks all the way up the ladder at transportation. This is, as Kara pointed out, a pedestrian district. I approve a 100-some-foot-long driveway approach in a pedestrian district here in front of, behind New Seasons. I can't, with any, all in all due respect, hold to any guideline anywhere else in the city. It's just, the more I think about it, this is going to be a very, very pedestrian-rich environment once this catalyst drives other redevelopment in this area. And trying to put head-in parking across a street like that is not the right thing to do. And I ran this one pretty far up the ladder the last day or so, and it wasn't received. And I know this is tough. It's a tough space with an existing building and kind of dead space to try to work around. But the pedestrian conflicts, the queuing of vehicles on 22nd that are going to be waiting for somebody to finish loading and unloading their groceries and backing out of that space and trying to turn in is really just going to cause a problem. And with our ped access way not being a street and the demands of streetcar possibly on 21st and traffic on 23rd, I think 22nd is going to be more of a vehicle street in this district. And I'm just highlighting that I think us approving a design exception for that in this district is going to be pretty tough. So I wanted to put that out there for the commission to kind of respond to, give us some feedback back. And then this is highlighter pointer work. It's not necessarily your purview. I'm just drawing attention to it, and I'll try not to get on a soapbox. I know those in the room have heard me start on this conversation, but this truck loading space, and this is coming up time and time again on New Seasons, they are full-size interstate. We call them WB67s. They're the largest vehicle we have. We're designing this as a pedestrian district with curb extensions. These trucks do not work in urban environments. And the loading space, which you guys have discussions over, doesn't work with this truck space. The vehicles cannot maneuver in these rights of way to move and back into those spaces. So we're being asked to then put that on the public street, taking away valuable on-street parking, loading, now the pointer, ramps that look and feel like pedestrian ramps to service the loading off of the backs of those that then feel like mid-block ped crossings are a safety problem for us. So I'm highlighting a concern more for the development team, but as that may drive other conversations around the building, this is an issue. This is, if I have one bad thing to say about a New Seasons throughout town, is we need to start changing how we deliver local neighborhood groceries outside of a Fred Meyer or a Safeway truck. And it's repeating itself with every project. And at some point, we have to say enough is enough. And in Northwest 22nd Raleigh, this is kind of a tipping point for us. So I'm highlighting that as a concern that we have.
It's actually too big for to make turns in the road?
For those large trucks, they can't back up into a tight loading space with on-street cars parked on both sides of those roads. And then making turning movements with those large semis in a pedestrian area where we're wanting to do tighter curb returns. Those trucks end up driving over curbs, breaking up the curbs, or taking out hitting signals. So they're, it's not a sexy subject. I realize it's a real issue for these new season sites, but it's become a bigger and bigger problem with every one of these projects.
How do you fix that?
I mean, well, it's a great question. You know, we had this
You're right.
So we had a conversation with Target 2.5-3 years ago when they were eyeing the Galleria store. And they pointed to City Target, as it was being termed in Seattle, as their first store. And they said, we realize we can't treat these like a suburban store any longer. We can't deliver the goods and services in a WB67 in a downtown environment. So we're adapting to our trend of going into smaller constrained sites, and we're actually having custom-sized trucks that can deliver in these tighter spaces. And so, you know, this is, parking in Northwest is a challenging conversation, and taking 3 or 4 spaces away from the public 6 hours, 4 hours a day, 5, 6, 7 days a week, especially as parking, you know, we've had 2 hours of parking conversation here. Parking is obviously very valuable. I'd argue a lot of those spaces that may get redesigned here may want to be on the street in that location. So it's a tough conversation. I can't tell New Seasons go adopt a new business model with a smaller truck. But these are local neighbor. This isn't a Fred Meyer site. This isn't a Safeway site that has a lot of room to play with.
You said something about the people queuing for the parking?
In the, on 22nd, the head end is really a problem.
I was going to say in a lighter note, though, David, this is a good example of where precedence doesn't favor us.
Sure. Okay. So Ben's got to go. I'd like to actually have him share his comments with you.
I apologize. I got to go. But one thing, I'm sorry to hear that about 22nd, Kurt, because I was a supporter of that parking for New Seasons. I'm like, that's great. Take those spots. It seems great. So are you saying that PBOT will say no to this development for those spots?
Our city traffic engineer told me no was the answer.
So he's still thinking about it?
It didn't sound like there was a lot of thought left.
But what about input from commission? I mean, if commission input could help, it would be really good to hear. Tonight is the night to hear from you on it.
Let me just say a couple things. So I am a supporter of that, so if there's any way that I could help convince the traffic engineer say yes to the 22nd, it may become what that, but it's not there now, and I think this development is there now, so I'm a supporter of that. And back to the pedestrian access way, I think, as Tad says, I guess I haven't seen the solution that works yet, that gets to, I think, the spirit of what this was all written for, this is not meeting it yet. It could. So, and I think what's successful, Jeff, about EcoTrust is the grade change, and that, so I don't know if there's a way to integrate grade change when you have the ADA issues there in the parking, but even a few feet, just to take, it takes the car more out of the conversation, so it gets to the tenor that I think this was all after, to be a pedestrian, not a pedestrian car interaction access way, but a pedestrian access way. So, but as drawn and as presented, and again, I think where we are now, I'd have to say no, I'd have to say let's keep trying. But yeah, I think it potentially could get there if it's done well and right. So. But I support the 22nd 100%. Parking.
Thanks, Ben. Do we want to...
Have we beaten the parking to death? Are you tired of hearing about it?
Does
anybody want to say anything about the building, the big building to the east?
Can I?
No, we're all confident you can get that all worked out.
I just want to end the parking discussion on a reminder to you, because you brought up two good projects that where parking was a big issue, Pearl Marriott and the Lloyd project, both of which you said no. Pearl Marriott got approved with no vehicle parking.
Right.
There wasn't a standard that said you are not allowed to do parking, but you got there through the guidelines. So I just want to remind you, this is an instance where, it doesn't explicitly say you can't do parking, but we have very strong intent through the guidelines, which you used for the Pearl Marriott. Mm-hmm. So if that helps, we don't explicitly say in every scenario you can't do X, Y, and Z, but we have the guidelines to guide us there.
Thanks, Kara. Okay, do you want to have some commentary?
Or do you have any
more? Oh, sure.
Can I ask a question of Kirk? Because loading is obviously an important issue. No loading facilities, no grocery store. I'm not sure, Kurt, how you can. How does this differ from Fred Meyer on Burnside or Zupan's or Trader Joe's and others that have over-the-road vehicles that service their facilities? Conway has big trucks that come to the site all the time. It's a warehouse. It's been a warehouse. It has a loading dock over there where big trucks come all the time. And my other question is the existing parking that's heading in is pretty dominant on Quimby, Raleigh, pretty much all those streets that have head-in parking, all of which have converted use in the last decade, maintain that parking. How did they do it?
And now's not the time to get into this debate. I mean, obviously, we just adopted a master plan that envisions a far different Conway than what we've had in a very auto-oriented surface parking lot environment. So I think we recognize that we're planning for streetcar, we're planning for mixed use, taller buildings that aren't auto-oriented. This district's going to evolve and change into a very pedestrian-rich environment. So what has been there doesn't necessarily set the precedent to remain there as we see this new development master plan play out. So very real points being realized with Whole Foods and Fred Meyer. We also take and learn from what may not work well or what we've decided in the past and try not to repeat decisions that may not be the best decisions going forward.
I have a question. If you went to all parallel parking along that edge, how many spaces would you be like? Kind of, you'd be like at 9 spaces along there, and currently we're showing.
But we don't necessarily mark spaces anymore because we've got so many varying sizes of vehicles. Smart cars, we can put 3 of those where a large SUV can sit now. But generally, somewhere between 8 and 9 spaces on a 200-foot block.
It seems like if you took the same dimension you've got there, you'd lose 3. If you went all parallel along that street edge,
that 22
that
feet
right?
per car,
right.
22 per car.
I'm not sure if that's right or not.
Yeah, I think you'd get about 5 maybe. Yeah.
I think it is worth noting that any parking that doesn't happen on the site does go on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
one
day.
Yep. Okay.
One last, what size truck, Kurt, would PDOT support?
We can have that conversation offline. I don't have those specifics.
Okay. David, I was just for your own, if you look on Raleigh, you'll see the 9. And I mean, there's a graphic of what it would look, what it could look
oh,
like.
Oh, I
there.
See. Sure. Gotcha. Right.
I know an architect's office on the east side that has head-in parking across the sidewalk. Yeah. It seems to work out all right. I don't know. Maybe just take some photos and...
Doesn't know what you're talking about. Kurt, what you? No, leave him alone. Okay.
Just luckily we're not a grocery store.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Do we want to have some summary comments then? Do you want to comment about the building at all?
Is there a building?
There's two.
Talking about architecture.
Huh?
No, I mean, I'll just go over it again. The design is spectacular. You can do better on the pedestrian access way. It's for this commissioner, it's an issue of perception. It may not be feet and inches, but it's, I'm sure, not perceiving it that way now. So you have a long way to go, not a little way. And in terms of parking on the backside on 22nd, I was concerned when I saw that, and I'm listening to PBOT, and I think that needs some real investigation rather than my opinion.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Jeff?
Ditto to the beautiful project. And as far as the pedestrian access way and this issue with parking within the 60-foot zone, I just think it's a matter of design. That, you know, I would agree with Tad, you got a long way to go, but I think there's probably some creative solutions available out there with design that help integrate that. Ben mentioned level changes, grade changes. I think that's something, you know, it's a difficult environment. You're dealing with a lot of thresholds with regards to grades and ADA and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I get it. It's not an easy thing to work through. As far as the head-in parking on 22nd, you know, I got to respect what PBOT's saying about that. I tend to feel like, you know, urban environments with on-street parking are what they are. They create jams and, you know, conflicts with traffic movement and so on and so forth, but that's part of being in an urban environment with an automobile, as far as, it's just my opinion. And it's a resource that, you know, if you lose it because during certain parts of, you know, the AM or PM peak hours with trips on that road on 22nd, and you end up causing delays or backups, you know, maybe that's, so be it, to accommodate the parking demand that this type of use, which is a catalyst use in this neighborhood. I mean, I think we all need to recognize the power that a grocery in this particular district is going to have with promoting more development within this area. So I think, again, matter of design, but really, really exciting to see it.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, this is the first real project within the master plan, and I think when I saw the master plan come through, I was just wondering what kind of buildings are going to get built in here, and I'm just elated and inspired at what I'm seeing here, and I just want to kind of thank Conway, that organization, for connecting with a developer that's got a really talented team to set the tone for the whole district. And my only hope as it goes forward is that people are looking at that bar and continuing to hit this bar that is being set by this project. I think it's incredibly, it's calm, but it's sophisticated. It has this really nuanced understanding of the ground level, of how you actually make a brand new building that has all the kind of innate characteristics that we love about old stuff without being old or kitschy, mm-hmm. which is phenomenal. It's such a nuanced but deep kind of understanding that I'm really impressed. And I think it's a kind of idea that I think can just really drive a district, you know, and set it. This building is going to be the kind of thing that's going to be photographed by cities outside of us that are trying to figure out how to do retail in the right way. So I just think it's a real breakthrough. And I think just the overall palette, Tom, if you can publish in the Daily Journal of Commerce your pro forma when you're done with this about how you can do a building that's made out of a real material mm-hmm. that has, you know, underground parking, because I'm, you know, all we see is people saying you can't do it. So I'm very impressed and very happy that it's happening here. I think the treatment of the warehouse is just really honest to what that thing is, but then has this really creative, simple way of dealing with color to describe these different pieces that actually make it up just by painting the facade, kind of like the PNCA approach, which is a great building, way of approaching a facade. I just think that's ingenious. And as far as the head-in parking, I leave that up to I guess it seems to me overtly that just walking on the sidewalk, it's odd. Having that, I understand it may be throughout the district. I appreciate, and I hope that somehow out of this, it's not something that is like shutting things down, but is looked at more as an opportunity to get new seasons together with the city of Portland, because they're booming. I mean, they're getting all over town, becoming a major force in our city. They are seen as neighborhood makers. And I think to be able to bring them to the table to see what they can do with their operation, which seems completely in line with their mission. And they've been willing. They've had come in with standards like the one up on Broadway with signage or something. They had just something they had to do, and we said, well, it doesn't really seem to fit. And they were like, okay, we'll change what we're doing to fit. So it'd be really great to have that conversation with them, see if something can come out of it that's about a new way of making an urban grocery store. That means we all have to go home, right?
Yes. We're done.
Okay. I understand that we had to talk a lot about the parking. I do believe, I agree with everyone that I think there's obviously improvements that could be made on that zone to make it feel more just pedestrian focused, getting the cars, somehow taking the cars out of it. But I'm not, just me personally, I'm not, in a position of feeling like you can't do that without, you don't have to get those parking spaces off the site in order to move forward. I think you can solve it with some kind of good design. I thought Commissioner Kaiser's recommendation about looking at the section of that and how it actually connects could be an interesting thing to consider. Let's see. Yeah, I thought the overall, all the urban moves, all the building massing moves, I thought were just fantastic. The only comment I had was, and it's part of what you're going to get to in the next phase as you move forward. It did seem that from the parking side, the building's a little light on its feet, has this great mass to it that just comes down and sits so proudly on the other faces and such great proportions. And so whether it's incorporating more kind of just screening on the ends to give it a little more mass or whatever, you'll figure that all out. But there does seem to be a little funny thing about the kind of lightness of that roof and the lightness of the structure, and then the kind of mass of the thing on top. The proportions of the openings and everything, I know you're going to develop it more, and I'm actually afraid of that. Like, I don't want much to change about it from what I'm seeing. It's beautiful. And it's just a great, it comes at a moment when we've got this new district happening, we've gotten through a kind of period in the city where certain architecture getting done, and this is like this moment of quiet and pause and sophistication that just feels like it's a whole new kind of look for the city that has got me all like renewed inspiration about what this whole district can be. So congratulations, really impressed.
And then there's me.
No, just kidding. No, I really have to say, and I actually did say it before, that I love the project. I am 100% supportive of it. David stole most of my thunder here. But I will go through a couple of things. I agree that the site organization is just great. The uses, the mixes of that, the adaptive reuse of a building, the sustainable aspects of that, how you've renewed the life of that building, given it life. Opened it up at the corners with not just the grocery store, but other uses to kind of broaden the approach and the attractiveness to other people. The active corners, particularly the plaza corner. The only part about that that I wondered about was that northeast corner, but after you explained Raleigh as your retail street, it makes more sense. I was thinking there might be some synergy with the proposed plaza on that's in the master plan, but I think it's fine to split those apart and just have a more active corner that's a block away. The massing is just great. An architecture that has evolved is just a wonderful. I haven't seen it. I've seen it attempted many times, but not done well. And this is, I think, with what you're saying, the sophistication and the nuance of it and the moves and the strength of it along with the nuance is what which was really kind of an interesting combination here. The kind of smaller retail elements that are going to reflect that kind of same kind of verticality is great. And again, the materials, because we've been inundated with hardy panels for a year now. And so it's really, really wonderful to see something that is really going to be of a much higher quality. I would agree the tuck under parking and that whole visible element, it just seems, it's just way too open right now. And I know you're going to work on that. And then you mentioned the lighting, Tom, and I think that's a big deal. And maybe pulling that down and having the lights up is going to keep that kind of, balance for that. There's just one odd little thing. It's the grocery carts outside. I mean, what is that? Anyway, it's just an odd. I haven't seen that. It's like what Fred Meyer used to do, and they don't even do that anymore. So anyway, it's just a comment. And then the parking aspect and the design of that access way. I don't want to get hung up myself on the numbers, and I think Tad has brought up probably the key. But it does seem to be. You know, the spirit was that 10-foot encroachment, you know, to one side. And I think if you can revisit
how you maybe carved out some real estate between the accessway and the cars. You talked about you had this kind of overly landscaped element that you didn't think worked too well. But I think we're going to put it all on your shoulders, Jeff, and say, okay, you have to do your ultimate best work, and you and Kurt have to get together and kind of design something that all of us can really say, okay, this is a precedent we can live with, because that's what you're doing. It's not a precedent just for this project. It's a precedent for the district. And so that precedent has to just be just over-the-top brilliant. And so we know you're up to it.
I'll blame Kurt when we do a delivery drop-off that has a throughway from Quimby to Raleigh to accommodate trucks. Right. I'm just setting the table for that one.
Okay, well, that might work. I don't know. But I think you can tell we're all jazzed about this thing, because it's just a wonderful start to this district. And I just don't want to see it compromised at the heart. And the heart is the pedestrian way on this block. And so I think we'll all wait with bated breath for your next presentation. Do you have any questions for us? Okay.
I just want to maybe, first of all, thank you very much for all the comments. I mean, they're well received. In terms of looking at what we can do in that pedestrian right-of-way, this idea of being able to kind of separate by heights gets pretty challenging if we want to maintain universal access and ADA right. sure. for those areas, sure. just to be right. frank right. with that situation. Mm-hmm. I like the idea, too. But even if this weren't a grocery store, those kind of heights and maintaining kind of universal access in that area at this point, I mean, grocery store exacerbates it, no doubt. But, I mean, that becomes challenging. And, in fact, we're putting quite a bit of money into lowering this existing slab that's there so we can bring it down to grade practically on three of the corners. It's just that northeast corner that kind of stays up. Uh-huh. So I don't really have that quiver in my is that the right way to say it? That quiver, that arrow in my quiver, right. But there's certainly other things that I think that we can really start to look at, getting into, I mean, any number of things, furnishings, materials, paving patterns.
Definition.
And definition, clarifying definition in that area. And then when you do pull off that path, what is it that's there? You know, what kind of...
Well, and for me, it's really, what is that actual physical interface when you're going by and on the... kind of the east edge of that path and the cars pulled up and, you know, I mean, what is that like? Because right now I think we're all
we'll try to show that condition. Yeah. I mean, we're still in kind of the early sketchup phase, and yes, we've got a Galaxy 500, you know, repeated 14 times.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, I thought it was part of the master plan. Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions?
Any comments on 22nd?
Oh, yeah, I actually support the head-in. I think because it has seemed to work in the Pearl, what's the street that the gym's on? And is that 13th? Or
13th. Yeah.
And so, okay.
Doesn't that put the sidewalk at the nose?
What's that?
Doesn't that put the sidewalk
at the nose? That is one issue. And most of us, while Kurt's here, that's something that we talked about. We've talked about, what if the sidewalk went to the front,
and then
the cars are out. Now the cars are out in this kind of weird zone of half on private, half on public, but we could fix the pedestrian part. It's something we talked about. It doesn't have to be back here. I don't know. Just throw it out
so
there.
So you can pull it to the building and...
Yeah.
Pull it to the building and the cars could sit back. It doesn't solve the street tree and curb cut issue, but it solves the pedestrian protection issue. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would hope there'd be...
It makes the retail better, too.
I think much like the other parking, maybe there's a solution in there that you can... navigate, because I anyway. Okay, I think we're adjourned.
Thank you.